It's time for Mac Break Weekly. I am so glad Renee Ritchie, Andy Iannacco, and Lori Gill are here to explain the mind-boggling number of changes, the new features to iOS 14, to Mac OS 11, Big Sur, but most importantly, the transition from Intel to Apple Silicon. This might be the biggest week in Apple history, and we're going to lay it all out for you next on Mac Break Weekly. Mac Break Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but aren't your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 719, recorded Tuesday, June 23rd, 2020. Jiggle mode. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Roman. Skip the waiting room and awkward face-to-face. Get ED medication conveniently delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Go to GetRoman.com/MacBreak for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. And by Molecule. Molecule is reimagining the future of clean air, starting with the air purifier. It's not just an innovation on existing technology, but a scientific breakthrough in air purification. For 10% off your first air purifier order, visit Molecule.com and enter the code MacBreak10. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the most important Mac Break Weekly of the last 35 years. And I welcome you, Leo Laporte, here. Andy Iannacco is joining us from WGBH Boston. And, of course, really, from Mac Break Weekly. He also does this Android thing called Material. I'm not going to go into it in great detail. If you're an Android fan, you probably should check it out.
I'm bringing down the system from within. That's always been my goal.
Relay.fm. That's Renee Ritchie's laugh. Yay, Renee Ritchie's back from Renee Ritchie. YouTube.com/Renee Ritchie. Great to see you, Renee. I bet you had a lot of thoughts. After yesterday.
So many things.
We're going to talk. And, of course, Lori Gill is here from iMore.com. She's managing editor there. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
We're all over.
So excited.
Yeah, we're all a little overwrought. We're all a little excited. First of all, let's get this out of the way. You already know it probably. It was funny. The day before the keynote, Sunday, John Prosser, Mark Gurman, another Apple rumor guy, all said no new hardware. It was clear somebody from Apple called them one by one and said,
No, but nobody from Apple called them.
There was planning.
If it had run in Bloomberg, if it had run in Wall Street, if it had been like BuzzFeed News, like if Walt Mossberg had tweeted it, but, let's just say it got out. It got out early that weekend.
I think it was in Apple's interest, though, to say ahead of time, look, this is not going to be about new hardware. Not even Apple tags. Although there was some Apple tag news, so we'll get to that.
There was a new Mac Mini, kind of, Leo. I mean, it was
that was new hardware. Yeah, that was. Yeah, you're right.
We have a new computer, but you can't buy it.
I went over my developer account to see if I could get one, because it'd be fun to have. But you have to tell them what app you're going to write with it and all that stuff. And I didn't want to lie. That would just be.
You remember Steve when he's like, when he introduced that cheese grater with the Pentium chip in it? And he's like, and we're going to want them back. We don't want them floating around out there. Yeah. We're going to get them back.
And that's the same thing with this. You don't own it. You rent it. $500, though, which is not bad. It's part of the Universal App Quick Start program and the developer transition kit. What's interesting is it's an iPad Pro with a little more RAM.
Yeah,
and some different ports.
You noticed that too.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's. I'm sure we'll get into it later, but that started me thinking that. So, what's stopping me from being able to install macOS on a brand new iPad? You're Apple. You're essentially telling me that most of what I need is already available in a MacBook.
Jailbreak in a dream, Andy. A jailbreak in a dream.
I do think it's a RAM issue, but we'll get to that. So, the key here, though, is. That they did, and they revealed this later, the whole keynote, all of the Big Sur demos, all of the Mac demos on this.
And yeah. It looked perfectly normal.
Shades of Intel again, right?
Yeah, nobody said, oh, boy, that looks sluggish. None of that. They then later ran Maya and Final Cut. They said Final Cut's ready. They said Logic is ready. They showed off
Lightroom.
Lightroom. Adobe's been working on it.
Shadow of the Tomb Raider, kind of.
Yeah. I have to say, some of that stuff didn't look great. But, you know, I mean, this isn't even.
It was emulated 1080p on an iPad chip. Yeah. I mean,
this isn't even close to what they're going to release. So,
yeah.
And as we suspected, not one word about, they didn't mention the ARM word at all. It's Apple Silicon. They're moving from Intel to Apple Silicon.
I went back and looked, and Steve Jobs never said x86 or mentioned any instruction sets. He's like, it's Intel, because he knew that was a name everyone would recognize from Wintel's monopoly or duopoly or whatever it was at the time. And it's just that's the marketing term. And I think for Apple, it's a ARM, and 90% of the casual viewers would say, what? Like an ARM?
Yeah.
And this is just like, oh, my iPhone and iPad chip. That's great. I love those.
I think there's also a reason not to say ARM, because ARM has maybe a bad reputation among people who've tried, for instance, Windows on ARM. It's felt sluggish, and so I think they just ARM.
It's not just that. Make their own chips. Yeah.
Not just that, but it also underscores that this is our own technology. We're not just jumping on this ARM bandwagon.
Right.
No one cares what the letters on the chip are. They just care about what do I get from this, and why should I not be scared? And I think that Apple really did address both of those during the keynote yesterday.
Lori?
Not as elegant.
Are you excited? Are you running? Are you going to get a DTK, man?
No, for similar reasons to you, I don't have an app to develop on it. So I would just want it just to, you know, to run it and see how it works. But I have been running Mac OS, and it does give you a hint at the future of an Apple Silicon Mac for sure, just visually. So
I should point that out. And I don't. We should see a show of hands. Developer versions of the new iOS, iPad OS, TV OS, Watch OS, and OS 11 were all available day of. You installed it, Lori? All of them?
Yeah.
What did you install?
I haven't gotten to Apple Watch yet, but that's just because my spare Apple Watch wasn't charged yet, so I'm getting there. But everything. Oh, and I haven't gotten to Apple TV yet. It's just a matter of the time that it takes, especially the I always have trouble with Mac OS installing it because I partitioned my hard drive this time. I made a volume on my MacBook Pro, so it always takes a while. You have to delete things and redo them. So right now I've got them on three things: iPad, iPhone, and Mac.
Well, that's interesting. So you could use Disk Utility, create an APFS volume, not touch your existing Catalina, right, and install it into that volume. And now if you wanted to, it's a dual boot, right? You could boot into Big Sur.
Yeah.
Oh, I might try that because I have to. Renee, what did you install? Did you install them all?
I installed it all, and I installed them on my daily drivers because no matter what the pain, I feel like I'm just not going to use them enough, like to be honest about them, always using
that's
them.
Fair.
Except I didn't put it on my Final Cut editing machine because I know the people who do that, like people like Martin, like SafeSolve, they do that. And they're like, it's fine, but then maybe beta 2 happens or beta 4 happens.
Right.
And like last year, you just couldn't launch it under beta 4, you know, so it's like it wouldn't run. So I put that on I was lucky enough I had a second computer here. I put it on that just so I could play with it. But otherwise, I vastly prefer putting them on my daily drivers.
Yeah, that makes sense. Andy, did you install, you don't have an iPhone. Well, maybe you do have an iPhone. I don't know.
No, I do. I installed it on one of my older iPhones. I have not installed it on my iPad Pro yet. I have not installed it on one of my old Macs yet. That's coming later this week. A lot of last night was I will admit something. I did decide to social distance, and so while the keynote was streaming, I was actually at the town beach. However, so I
you
saw
because
you lose a few
you
hours
outed
of work.
Yourself,
because
sir.
As you well know, when Apple's got an event, they vacate the beaches. There's no one there. It's great.
Exactly.
You can have the beach to yourself. Yeah.
It's just the Microsoft people and Andy.
Yeah. But yeah, but so I decided what was the easiest to install, what had some of the most interesting things, and it was, and unfortunately I didn't have the wherewithal at the moment to suddenly sacrifice one of my Macs to the beta gods or the dev gods. I have to say that it really is a tie for first place between things I'm excited to try on the iPhone and things I'm really excited to see live click and drag on the Mac, because that was, again, we'll talk about all this stuff in depth, but that was a huge leap forward for the Mac yesterday.
And for iOS, to be honest. So I didn't install any of it because I'm not crazy, although Micah bricked his iPad Pro and had to do a DFU. Oops. Did get it working. But good. That's an important caution.
I feel like fortune doesn't risky thing shine on Micah when it comes to things like this.
Yeah.
Poor Micah.
He's had problems before. And I'm not going to even take a chance. I'll consider it. Public beta is next month. Maybe when the public beta, if I don't
and
hear
watch
too many
for the
howls.
First time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we've always said
they're
not going to do public betas for the watch because there's no easy way to roll back. But mm-hmm. I guess they feel fairly confident.
There's going to be iPhone soon enough, but you won't be able to roll back either, so they might as well get their feet back.
Yeah, we got so much to talk about. There's no way we're going to get this all in. So I'm going to start. Let's start with ARM, Apple Silicon, because I think that is a huge story. But I do not want to downplay what happened to iOS 14, because honestly, that's just as big. It's been a long time since Apple changed Springboard, and this user interface is exciting.
Maybe what didn't happen to iPadOS 14, by contrast.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that interesting? I also feel like even though there isn't a convergence of all the platforms, one line in that speech kind of was a big eye-opener when they said, and oh, by the way, your iOS apps should run without modification on an Apple Silicon
Did you watch State of the
device.
Union, Leo? Did you watch the State of the Union
We streamed
afterwards?
Both,
when they showed Readl documents, and they're like, if you've made a good iPad app, by the way, you get resizing, you get multiple windows, you get dark mode. And I was like, wow. Okay.
I have to say
an extra bit, you get Catalyst. You know,
the
like,
one thing I installed was Xcode 12. I'm very judicious, but I did install that because I really, Swift UI is very interesting. I wanted to play with it, and I did really. I'm starting to think I'm not a fan of hardware dependent development. When I write code, I like to write it so it runs everywhere, which means I don't do GUIs most of the time, and if I do, they're crap because you can't do cross platform GUIs very well. But I like the coding part. I like the solving problems part. But I have to say, if you could write an app that would run on an iPhone, an iPad, and a Mac, you've got a really interesting market there for you.
It's also raises a lot of questions about what Apple sees the Mac being or the platform being in the next 5 years. That really did take me by surprise. Technically, we would have all guessed that was feasible, but the idea of blurring that line for consumers about saying that there is now no longer necessarily a hard divider between iOS apps and Mac apps. If there's an app you like on your phone and you think it runs, it just by all means install it on your Mac. It'll be good. It'll be the exact same experience. But that last bit always kind of gets me worried because it shouldn't be the same kind of experience. You should be losing something by going from the device that this was specifically targeted to something that it was not specifically targeted to. And by that, I mean that there should some things that shouldn't. If it's just as elegant on a Mac as it is on a multi-touch device, then that multi-touch interface that you've come up with isn't that good. Similarly, if you copy it onto a Mac and you don't really notice that you're missing anything that you would from a competing desktop app, then that's some extra overhead that you're not really using. That's an extra advantage you're not using. And I admit that this could be just as much an admission that Apple and its developers are doing genius work creating very full-featured apps that work no matter what context they're in. But as someone who still has the keychain tool for taking it for unhooking an Apple Disk II drive from an Apple IIe, it's the sort of thing I naturally sort of worry about. So this is going to be a fun next couple of years to watch for sure.
I don't even know where to begin. I guess that's a good place to start as any. Is what is the What is the future of the platform, the whole kit and
the ecosystem?
Google,
yeah,
the ecosystem. Yeah.
So, one of the things is they were so worried.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, for a long time, people have been worried, and rightly so, that the Mac is going to become iOS. And I think when people say that, they talk about it, they think about it in terms of an open computing environment, a platform where most recently it ran Unix, you know, under the seams. It had a beautiful GUI on top, and you could boot camp into Windows and do all your web development and all these things. And it worked like everyone who grew up with a traditional computer assumed it to work. And they saw iOS as sort of this lockdown gatekeeper, not even gatekeeper, lockdown, restricted, only App Store environment. But I think where Apple has been going is that once the technology stack is the same, you know, they can open or close different valves. But once the interface, the conventions are similar, for people who aren't sophisticated, there's no distinction. The plumbing is irrelevant to them. They just know they have a mail app and a Safari and a Safari, and the things look the same and behave the same. And we're never getting an Instagram app for the Mac, but look, I can just launch the iPhone version. And it for them, for this vast majority of consumers, 80-90%, who aren't the really loud ones on Twitter, you know, they, for them, it makes the Mac a much more accessible computing platform for them.
The fear, though, because that sounds really great on the surface, and for everybody who's not, you know, us right here in this room, you know, there's a lot of people that this is, that's a great thing. It's easier to use. It's, you know, it reminds them of the iPad they use, or reminds them of the iPhone they use. But I'm getting the tingle in the back of my neck right now of like, is this where we're going? Are we dumbing down the Mac? And no. I have always felt that that's not what Apple is doing.
And it's not what we want.
And it's not, it's definitely not what we want. But what I'm seeing now does actually create a little fear in me that I didn't have before, which is this language, this design language across the board is starting to like really seep into what are they going to take away on the Mac in the future. For example, the harder it is to get to load a Mac and Mac app that's not from the App Store, it gets harder and harder. You know, there's new, you know, certificates and things.
Let me reassure you. I think this is the best possible news for those of us who love the Mac. And I think even in the State of the Union, they showed Linux running in hypervisor mode. I think they understand that there is a small but vital audience for traditional computing experience on the Macintosh. And I think that they've dodged the bullet here. Remember Phil Schiller saying, will Mac OS and iOS merge? No! I don't think that you're going to see... I was worried more, frankly, that Mac OS would be eclipsed. That Apple's vision for computing was iPad. And I really think that this is clear now that Apple can create this beautiful, rich, diverse ecosystem. The problem was things like the Mac Pro were so niche. They couldn't make many. They couldn't sell many. And that made me scared. When I saw the revenues for Macs going down, that made me scared.
It'd be like Xserve, right?
This changes that because now it's part of a continuum. It's not just off in the corner. There's a continuum.
Did you notice, Leo?
Go ahead.
That they I don't know if they came out right and said it, but the hypervisor support looks like it's being built into the silicon.
Exactly.
So that it will. It's not just that, you can run a VM. It's like
no.
Parallels, Docker.
They did say it. And the reason they said that is because it's built into the silicon and Intel. And so there is a number of people, DevOps, sysadmins, people like that, who are saying, well, now I'm not going to be able to use a Mac anymore if you're – but that solved that problem. Hypervisor is very
Linux.
Important.
Go ahead. Yeah. I was very, very pleased that – I know they're talking to a developer conference, audience of developers, but that they specifically said, and by the way, run Linux. That's fine. Run alongside Mac apps. That's
they
fine.
They didn't mention Windows. There won't be a boot camp, I predict.
They weren't able to mention Windows. My understanding is that that's a whole – partnership. Microsoft has to be on board.
Yeah, they didn't mention Microsoft. In fact, Microsoft's already got Office
apps,
ported.
Apps, but Parallels. They showed Parallels running Linux, but Parallels does not make money running Linux.
Right.
So it's in everyone's best interest to. They're not going to announce it yet, but I believe it's in everyone's best interest to get that solved.
And Windows does run on ARM. Microsoft makes Windows on ARM, so it's not like they don't have that.
This could be the first computer that actually runs Windows on ARM in a pleasing way. So that's a shot in the arm for Windows. But you do. I mean, these are all really good points. The things that are still kind of in my worry queue are I part of the conversation about the redesign of the Mac OS's look and feel was that it's a cleaner, it's a simplified design. And that's, again, one of my little trigger phrases saying, well, look, I've got this huge screen in front of me. I'm not saying go like the Windows Microsoft Office 6 route and just put every single ribbon bar and every single button bar up there. But it's really there are times where I'm using a really complicated app like Photoshop or a video editing app where I don't know how to do a cut, or I don't know how to do a dissolve until I look around and actually see the button for it right there pinned to the side of my window. And the other thing that gets me a little bit worried is the reason why I still am running the next to the newest version of macOS on my real machine is that I'm still concerned about sandboxing. Sandboxing is very much what Apple considers like a very, very positive and important future-looking technology to make sure that code running in one box can't interfere or observe or manipulate anything that's running anywhere else. But I'm concerned if things get so tightened down in Big Sur that the video transcoder app that I loved from 5 years ago won't run because someone did it sort of as a hobby project. They're not interested in creating an app store version of it, and this $2,000 computer I bought is not going to be able to run an app that Apple hasn't either blessed or doesn't come from the app store directly. This is my biggest worry, that Apple will go the iOS route and say that you can't run any app on a Mac under a Mac OS that does not come from the app store. Doesn't matter if you trust it. Doesn't matter if it's been signed by us. We're shutting that down completely.
I've always worried about that. I think this is the best evidence that that's not going to be the case.
They were also reassure people really quickly out of the gate, because a bunch of people came on Twitter immediately going, is it Mac App Store only? And everyone kept saying, no, it's not Mac App Store only. Yep. And in fact, you can still do Kext. I don't know how much longer that's
going to be. Well, that was going to bring that up. Yeah. They're talking about kernel extensions. They say, we don't like them, but you can still do them.
Yeah.
I think that this is very much Apple acknowledging, and maybe it was more from the State of the Union, but very much acknowledging the market and the importance. You know, it's going to support containers too, and that, you know, Docker. You're right, Renee. There must have been a reason they couldn't mention Windows, because there's a new boot camp icon. Boot camp runs under OS 10, OS 11.
it's gonna take a while.
I know it is. I think that Apple. To me, what they showed. And it's the ultimate reassurance, Lori, and that's why, because I have the same concerns and same as you, Andy. Yeah. I've been talking about this for years, but I think they actually showed us the good news, and there's no need for them to do that anymore, right? Because they've got this continuum, so a user could choose what they want, but you can be sitting on a Mac running an iOS app, and there's lots of them you might want to run. You can develop, you can run containers, you can run emulation. I think this is the best of all worlds. Yeah. And the thing they also emphasized again and again is power, power, power. You heard that word many times.
Yeah.
That don't worry, we're going to be able to make very powerful machines. Now, I want to point out, we had a little bet going. I don't know if you knew about it, but we had a little bet going about how long this transition was going to take. And I think they split down the middle because they said 2 years. But Ming-Chi Kuo says this year there'll be a 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
That seems reasonable. That sounds about right. Not a MacBook Air, not a MacBook, a MacBook Pro. And that all, Ming-Chi Kuo could be wrong, just a rumor, all of the Macs shipping in 2021 would
but
have.
But don't you think this is a parallel? Because Steve Jobs said 2 years, and they shipped a MacBook Pro and an iMac that first year, which is rumored to be shipping now. Yep. And then it took like just under a year. Yep. So I think this is like Scotty from the Enterprise, where you under promise, over deliver, because that's how you get your reputation as a miracle worker.
Yep. And I think that there was a lot of impetus to do that because of the slow transition to 64-bit that bit them in the butt. There's so many apps that don't run on Catalina. They realize you drag it out. Developers go, I'll get to that. You make this very exciting. You give them lots of incentive, and you say, and it's going to happen fast. I thought it was weird that they said, why do you think they said this? And we still have Intel Macs in the pipeline.
Because it's true, and it's what happened with Steve in PowerPC, too. They had several PowerPC computers that they still needed to ship. And you
Who's
don't want
to buy that?
there are people who are very established in their production workflows who they are not going to go anywhere near an Apple Silicon Mac for a year or two until they see exactly how Final Cut is running.
So
exactly
it's reassuring pre-press. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. And they did just do a very expensive Mac Pro. I'd be really pissed if I bought that.
Yeah. They want to make sure that those Intel Mac Pro people don't get angry that there were any. That was the last
one. People want the best Intel. But, they don't want the worst ARM. They want the best Intel, and that's what these are right now.
Right.
I like the way Apple has. So in this very short timeline of 2 years and possibly less than 2 years that all Macs, the Mac lineup will move to ARM. That they're also including a lot of tools to help developers and to help users. If that app doesn't actually support ARM yet, so there's
Rosetta 2,
virtualization, Universal 2. These are all tools that help either a developer to quickly transition or help us as a user to get a translated app. So I think that's a great way to let app developers know that we understand this is happening fast. And if you can't get to it in time, we've got some options.
Said they're going to continue to support Intel for many years. But I do think it was telling that they named it Rosetta 2 and Universal Binary, because I think that's to also reassure you. You know, we've done this before. It worked pretty well. What is going to happen to Cocoa? Are we
a lot of Cocoa? A lot of pain to developers that who felt as though we have to hold on to this part of our code that still uses Cocoa for whatever reason. I think that Apple's going to try to kill it as quickly as possible.
I sat down. If you're using Swift, you're golden.
Did you see Ali wasn't doing AppKit instead of the Union? And he's the AppKit guy. So
yeah. No, you got to be using Swift UI. You got to be on Swift. But if you are, you're golden. Now, I don't know what percentage of developers have made that move.
But wasn't it interesting how they sort of boiled the water for you there? They're like, if you've made a first-class iPad app, it'll just run. Yep. It'll run beautifully on the Mac. Yep. But then if you do that one little extra step of clicking that Catalyst box and making a few tweaks, you can make it a really good Mac app. And then you can make it native. It's very easy steps.
Because what do you need Catalyst for now?
To make it the Mac, like to give it the Mac style sidebar, to customize the menu bars, to control the Catalyst has pixel by pixel control for developers now.
So it basically becomes a library, so that you can add Mac-ish features. But
code within like different interfaces for the different platforms.
It's for a developer. This is a very positive story if you're modern. It's not great if you're, you're doing QuickBooks, but
if your Carbon code is still.
Yeah, it's not great.
Okay, and Carbon, okay.
Yeah. But I think if you're a developer and you jumped on the Swift bandwagon and you're interested in Swift UI and you started to use that, boy, there were the demos they did. I mean, making a widget.
All the widgets, right? They're all cross-platform Swift UI code. So you make one widget and you adjust them and they're on every platform.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. So if you understand that development mode, if you're comfortable with that, and I have to think that's most of the apps Apple wants anyway. I don't know if it's Microsoft, but obviously that's been done. Then you're going to be – it looked pretty easy for you.
Yeah. Again, it's the edge cases that will really get you, though, and that's why I don't like the term edge case, because it seems to indicate, you're all freaks out there. There are apps with 10 years of development behind them, and the reason why they might still have some older code with them, they haven't been rebuilt from the ground up using modern Apple technologies, is because Apple has not delivered to them a resource that will actually make the app work the way they want to. And we get back to sandboxing. So many older apps where they could count on being able to find, we need to find this one folder somewhere on the Mac so we can do this really useful thing for the user. But now sandboxing isn't letting us do that the way that we want it to do. My scientific notation app has text manipulation needs that aren't covered by the standard system. That's why we spent a lot of money 6 years ago to create a whole library to do that. And now none of that code is going to be approved by the App Store. So that's why there's, for a lot of, it's, I think we talked about this on Twitter couple of days ago that if it's the odd situation where the people who started learning coding like 2 years ago when they were 13 or 14, in many cases have a big leg up on the people who have like degrees in computer science and have been doing it, supporting the Mac since the 68,000 days. Because if you started a couple of years ago doing nothing but let's do it, Apple has given us so many easy tools to make really powerful apps so that all I have to think about is what specifically my app has to do. And all I have to do is just support all these wonderful resources that Apple's given me. If you've done that, oh my God, it really is just touch a button and you're done. But there are going to be some older apps where a lot of where if your roadmap for the rest of the year was, this is the year that I finally add cross-network support for whatever, you have to erase that from the dry erase board and say, this year, our goal is to make sure we have a version of this app that will actually be accepted by the App Store.
So there's some question in the chat room, and I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask you, are they going to do the same chips for iPads that they do for Macs?
No.
No.
Yeah. No, it's a new family.
It's Apple silicon. It'll be an Apple.
Yes.
And I imagine the differences you'll see will be multi-core, higher clock speeds.
Bigger GPUs.
The GPUs are going to be very interesting.
Neural engines particularly.
By the way, now you see why Metal was so important and why Apple went, when NVIDIA said, we're not going to develop for this anymore. Okay, fine.
Well, can you imagine, like, the constraint on AMD for the last few years has been money. Like, they put so much money into doing Ryzen and Threadripper that only now do they have the money to start doing the RDNA and the Navi 2 architecture that's competitive again with Intel. And Qualcomm literally can't afford to make watch silicon because they have to sell chip by chip. Apple's budget is, they make their money on the whole device.
Their budget is infinite. Go ahead, say it.
It's limitless. And if they say you have 5 years to make a card that's better than whatever the 680 is going to, the 6080 is going to be from Intel in 5 years, that's a good team to put on that problem.
Yeah. I think Apple has the talent. There's no question about it. And they have the will and they have the market to just eat it up. Yeah. And I have to say, the only thing that scares me is that this stuff is too good. And it's going to, we're really at a risk of a monoculture because the Apple ecosystem is now going to be so dominant.
There is a problem, though. Like people like Brianna Wu and a couple other people have been pointing out that it's once again Apple targeting their customers. And every time they do that, more and more customers fall by the side. Like already, hardcore gamers don't use Mac. They, even if you have a MacBook Pro you love, you have a PC gaming rig. And especially if you want to do VR, you have a PC gaming rig. And a lot of hobbyist computers have been leaving the Mac because they stopped. You know, they were originally a very Unix-y Mac by necessity, and they've slowly, you know, stopped automatically supporting the projects, and they got rid of things like 32-bit apps, which you could say that people had all the time in the world to support, but they still want to run the things that need those, whether they're audio plugins or they're like the level builder or they're, you know, things from Valve. They just need 32-bit support, and they're building Linux boxes now. So it's going to be very good, and I'm totally stealing this line. It's going to be very good for the people who already have the same priorities that Apple has, but it's going to increasingly knock people off the sides of the cliff who don't have those same priorities.
I think that gamers are not big Apple fans, to say the least, anyway.
Yeah.
However, you have to have good GPUs for Maya. You have to have
3D
good GPUs.
That's like Brianna's whole thing was like Maya is barely supported now, and there's a whole bunch of programs. I think it was Brush or one of those. They don't come to the Mac, and if they do, it's a token port that they never bothered to iterate on.
That might change. I think if you have a machine that can suddenly render, you know, 10 times faster, and, you know, you just need to head support Metal. I'm not sure that that's going to be the way it is always. They showed Unity, not running all that well, I thought. But, you know, we're watching a stream, so I don't know what it really looks like.
Not Unreal, but Unity was interesting, too.
But I do think that there's a good possibility Unreal might be ported to it. I don't know. But, again, I don't think they care about gamers all that much. But they definitely care about pro users.
No. I think that's part of the problem. Users.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I buy a $1,000 laptop or an $800 desktop, I'm willing to accept some limitations in exchange for $1,000 in my pocket. Given how well Apple builds these machines and how long into the future these machines are being supported by new operating systems, I mean, my 5 now 6 year old laptop will run Big Sur no problem. I don't know what I'm going to be getting into in 3 or 4 or 5 years from now. And so I don't want the lifespan of my computer to be limited by Apple's deciding that, oh, well, Andy is mostly a writer guy. He does a lot of photography. He doesn't really play games. He spends some time in the command line, but not a lot. Plus he has like a Linux box for Linux stuff. He doesn't need this. He doesn't need this capability, or he doesn't need this feature. I always think back to one of the most brilliant trademarks that Apple ever took out for their college program, which is describing the Mac as wheels for the mind, and the slogan, "The power to be your best." That you didn't think that you're a graphic designer, but we will take all the mucky muck out of the process of laying out a newsletter or editing a photo or editing a video, so that you can discover that I'll be damned, I actually am a film editor, I actually am a photographer. And I'm worried that once you start selling people a box that says, "And good news, we've put limitations over what you can do with it."
Yeah.
Don't worry, that little tiny brain of yours, you won't get confused by anything. You know?
No,
so that's yeah. I'm excited about the Mac again, but the only thing that's holding me back a little is, again, worrying that 3 or 4 years from now, 12K holography is going to be a thing. And I didn't buy the right Mac for 12K holography. You know,
well, Mac, Andy.
That's always a problem. I do have to say that the iPad has developed a number of really good photography apps. I would say my photography workflow on the iPad now can be as good as on the desktop. And so it's not that people, it's the legacy guys, the Lightrooms of the world that are not coming along. I should also say I was wrong in saying Apple doesn't care about gamers. Obviously they do, just not PC gamers. They care a lot about casual gamers and Apple Arcade and that story is really good. You suddenly get access on your Mac to a million iOS
Monument
games.
Monument Valley,
yeah. Right? So that's actually a very good story. And I would bet there are a lot more of those kinds of gamers than there are hardcore.
And it's super interesting because if the VR rumors that we saw last week, Mark Gurman did this whole long report on Apple and VR, are true, and they change directions from having to have a big hub, which was more of a traditional computing solution, to having something like the Oculus Quest, then a lot of the tools and software, not only to develop that, will probably be optimized for these Macs, but it could bring a whole different kind of gaming environment to Apple hardware in general.
They were very clear to say you're going to be better, ML's going to be better. A lot of the stuff, the more modern technologies programmers want
unified memory, which I know some people don't prefer, but other people find really fast.
Huge. I mean, there's a lot. It's a lot to unpack too, and I haven't even started watching the seminars, you know, the sidetracks, but there's a lot to unpack. I do agree with you, Andy, that some of the edge cases could be very burdensome, things like audio extensions, which may be challenging to port. I don't know. They did mention that specifically, that, you know, your extensions would still work, but those are going to be challenging. I don't know.
There are going to be some good stories if Apple chooses to share them about all the little things that like didn't even make a keynote, didn't even make a footnote, but were just such a bear to fix. Well, like just even Thunderbolt 3, which is that thing that we got for free with the Intel chip, we now have to do ourselves. Okay,
or maybe not. Maybe you know this would be a good time to say USB 4 is probably all we need.
So, as long as there's still the same expectation that I can run 3-4K screens and a GPU off of whatever they're running off of this ARM-based Mac. The key point to all of this is going to be, we are doing nothing but giving you things. We are not taking things away from you by switching to ARM.
That's a good point.
But that was a huge shot at Intel when they started bringing up the SoCs that Apple made, and you start seeing that it's not just a CPU and a GPU, and it's not even just a neural engine or a machine language accelerator. Very subtly in those corners, there was like Apple had to write their own timing controller because Intel just could not ship them a timing controller that would work on 5K displays. They had to build their own H.265 encode decode block because Intel just couldn't build it into the processor and they were tired of offloading it to the GPU. And all of these things they sort of patchworked into a T2 chip to cover up the stuff that they wanted to do, but they couldn't do with Intel silicon, is just built into this next generation of silicon by birthright. And even things like the performance controller solar. One of the reasons why Apple gets such good battery life, such good performance efficiency, is that they can switch between those cores, like, and the neural engine, like on an instruction by instruction basis. And there's just so many good things coming into this generation of silicon compared to Intel, which is really been standing still for several years.
Yeah, there were a number of slides that I really wanted to freeze frame on. This is one of them where they're starting to, let me see if I can get to it. They're starting to talk about that exact thing where all the corners.
And how great is it to see Johnny Tsurugi finally at an event?
Never seen him before. I know. No. It was fabulous. I really was very excited by this. I thought this was...
You think it's like he's a star now and he's demanding green M&Ms and it's just impossible to get.
No. He is a star. He doesn't have to... Shoot, I was on the slide and I had it. I couldn't freeze it fast enough. It's interesting.
Can I say parenthetically that for the past month, all of these engineers and all of these managers have been saying, "Oh, by the way, we're gonna need 2 hours in your lab. We need to install dramatic, colorful up lighting."
Do you think this was Do you think this was a set or was this the lab? You think?
I think it was.
I'm guessing a set.
I think it was a set. Some of those chairs looked pretty, but
the camera
didn't look
work
like,
and transitions were so good throughout
well
the entire
done?
Thing.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah,
I was actually there was a little trepidation because obviously immediately as soon as Tim Cook came on, never blinked, obviously a shot ahead of time and edited, and I was here's that slide. I was a little nervous because I thought, oh, this is going to be kind of dead, and it was a little, but man, they had such information and they did a very good job, and that was the thing that Apple wanted, obviously, was by editing it ahead of time to really make it rich with content. I mean, just this slide alone, I mean, I'm just looking at this going, wait a minute, what?
It's like the A13 slide from the iPhone event where it's just chock full of blocks and you want to take each one of them apart.
I would have loved to have done 10 minutes on each of these things.
I really wouldn't mind if they went to this format for all WWDCs. I really like how precise this was put together. I really thought because there's no audience to react, not that they're always shooting for those applause breaks, but I feel as though that really laser focused if this is going for an hour and 53 minutes, then we have to have an hour and 53 minutes of content because we're not going to lose 23 minutes to cheering and applause.
Right. Mm-hmm. I didn't mind
one
bit.
Craig still did his crack marketing team and their drug-induced.
That was weird. Would you please explain that?
Is that a thing with like Phil and Jaws where he just has to needle that point? Because there were no engineers or developers in the audience to laugh at that. That was purely for him, it felt like.
It was very weird. I was trying to figure out what was going on there. So what is the backstory on that?
He started that when they changed the California names. He said, and he's done it a couple of times, like, oh, it's impossible to believe these are the real families of our marketing teams when they looked at the photos.
Oh, yeah.
But he's like, he did the whole OS X weed thing when he said, like, they were taking a trip through the back.
Right.
I think it's his version of dad jokes.
I guess. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I really hope they're not crack fueled, but okay. no, it was really good, and I think here's the Tomb Raider demo. Now looking at this instead of streaming directly, it's not impressive. I mean, compare that to Unreal 5, it's not even close. But
is
it's good enough.
Is that the game itself, though? I can't remember.
It's not a cutscene. Oh, I don't know.
It's Tomb Raider Shadows. And the impressive thing is supposed to be that they just downloaded. It's an Intel app.
Just ran it. Yeah.
And it did dynamic translation at install. And then it's doing like real time.
That's one of the things that's really cool is that when you download the app, it goes through the whole thing and translates ahead of time. So there, I imagine, will be some longer process of installing.
And for JavaScript, it'll do dynamic just-in-time translation. Right.
Go ahead.
So if you think about the fact that this was an iPhone game that's running on a Mac, it's really impressive. Were they expecting,
it's an Intel Mac game.
PlayStation quality.
It's the other way around. Yeah. It's an Intel game running on an iPad chip.
Tiff, yes.
So, yeah. When you know that, then, okay, that's pretty impressive.
Although Metal's probably doing some of the lifting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what does it say that after years, maybe even decades of Apple trying to figure out how to get game developers excited about gaming on the Mac, they finally answers, well, what if we internally got excited about making their games work on our hardware? There we go. We finally have the solution.
Yeah.
That is a big deal that I hadn't even considered, that all the tier one games that have been sort of missing out on the Mac experience and suddenly getting those maybe for free or without at least make them playable. I'm not a gamer, but I know a lot of people for whom that is at least one of the things that they consider when they consider what Mac to get, or excuse me, what machine to get.
It's nice to have that.
Pokemon Go on the Mac?
Ooh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Pokemon Go does not run on iOS 14, Leo. It crashes on launch. Just warning.
Oh, yeah.
I tell you, that's why I'm
sad
moving.
Today.
Not moving my. Here's Debian 10 running GNOME. A lot of the GNOME fans were thrilled that GNOME got a little shout out.
Is it GNOME or GNOME?
I never know GNOME, but you can say whatever you want. I don't care. Let's take a little break. There's lots more to talk about, including, I think, the biggest changes to iOS in history.
Oh,
we'll throw that in. If there's anything else you want to talk about with ARM 2, we can. I mean, this is one of those where it's just an embarrassment of riches. It's so exciting, yeah. And we are really. I mean, hyperbole aside, this is a new era. We're about to enter a new era, and I think there's a lot of stuff that's uncharted. And I don't know. I can't say for sure, Lori, that we're going to lose our beautiful, cherished Macs, but it feels like it's actually better than it was. It feels like it's part of a now. It's a full partner in a beautiful ecosystem.
That's a good way to describe it. I like that.
Okay,
good.
Yeah. Leo's a poet.
Makes you feel better.
I'm very pleased. I'm very, very pleased by what I saw yesterday. As I've been saying for the past month or so, both of my laptop and my desktop Macs are reaching end of productive life, and so I'm sort of budgeting for buying a new desktop and buying a new laptop this year or the next. And this really got me excited about, at the very least, buying a new Mac desktop.
Would you want the first Apple Silicon?
That's an interesting question. It would depend on what it is. I mean, if they took the developer edition of this and said, oh, by the way, we have fixed all of the this was a fine computer for developer use, but we realized that for human beings we needed to fix a few things. But here is our Apple Silicon based Mac Mini. I would consider it. If it particularly if we're at the right price, because I'm really, really keen to give this as thorough a workout as I possibly can as someone who has to write about this sort of stuff. Yeah, well, and also I can think about, if worst comes to worst, okay, I'll tell myself I need a new one 2 years from now in addition, and that'll work. But it really does shift everything. I am convinced that Apple's going to do a good job with the transition. What they wind up with is a little bit of a question mark in my mind, but the thing I want every time there's like a WWDC keynote, every time there's a Google I/O keynote, anything like that, a State of the Union, that sort of thing, I want to get excited about what the future holds for a platform. And this is the first time in years I have been actually excited about what could be in store for the Mac. It must be 5 or 6 years since I've thought that Apple even cared this much about the Mac, frankly.
It felt like they drifted away. It really did, yeah.
The thing that excites me is that, like, Apple, when you look at what they've done on iOS, they decide they want a feature like Face ID, and the Silicon team, software team, and hardware team spends 2 to 3 years making it, integrate it, and then ships it. Where previously with the Intel chips, it's like, we want to do, we can't. Okay, we'll make a T2 chip. Can we do okay. And now they'll be able to do the same thing with Macs. It'll be like, they can ship those features not only at the same time as iOS devices, but they can ship exclusive Mac features that they've specifically designed for the Mac.
Yeah.
They can create roadmaps of features.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. If they do it wrong, it's their fault too. But they can create roadmaps to features like infinitely, and then just they're the ones in charge of making sure it happens.
And it's a virtuous circle.
They don't have to wait.
Instead of having to do stuff because Intel screwed up, it's all powers itself. It's the momentum that Apple's going to build here. It could be awesome. It could really be. Again,
this is why I'm really keen to see. I really like the idea of this the first mass market one being a laptop, because this is one area in which there is just you can talk about how, oh, but look what all we're doing with the system on a chip, and look what we're doing with this structure. It's like, okay, here is last year's Intel-based version of that. 8 hours of battery life. Here is the new Apple silicon. 16 hours of battery life.
We haven't even talked about that, but yes, that's one of the things ARM, anyway, really excels at. And boy, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Even just a 20% increase in battery life would get a lot of people say, okay, I was worried, but I'll.
Yeah. Well, and the only bad thing is if you're due for a new Mac, this probably isn't the time you want to go to the store. And that's what worries me a little bit about Apple saying, well, there's still more Intel in the pipeline. I guess that is for people who
need
it.
Again, how change adverse you are. Because there are some people who are going to say, not a Rev A board, sir. No, you idiots can spend 3 years bleeding edge testing, you know, beta testing Apple's hardware. I'll wait and then I'll get the last Intel. I'll ride that 3 or 4 years. And then it'll be nice and warmed up by the time I buy
that's fair. Apple Silicon. That's fair. I, for one, would not, you know, I need a new iMac. Lisa's iMac's pretty old. There's no way I'm buying a new iMac until I see what Apple does next year.
I think I mentioned this before, though. I don't think they suffer from that. I think that as a brand, they market themselves well enough that, you know, a good portion of people who want a new Mac don't even know what Apple Silicon is versus Intel. They just want a new Mac, so they're going to just go buy it when it comes out.
That's probably true.
And then there's going to be the people like us who are going to wait, but I don't think that's enough of a portion of the community that will have a negative effect on sales of the Mac. I really don't think that's going to make a very big difference
in
the end.
So if I bought a G3 Cube, I mean, if you bought a PowerPC at the end of the life there after Apple's Intel announcement, did that work out for? How did that work out?
Yeah, they held on to Rosetta for a long time.
Yeah,
yeah. Does anybody here have had? Was anybody surprised when Apple cut support for Rosetta finally?
No.
But I was surprised.
Like,
wow,
really?
Rosetta is still in
Mac. You're still using that?
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the Quicken users were angry.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, the transition was very well managed, which is I think why they say Rosetta too. It was so well managed last time. I think they hope that you'll see that and do it, and they'll do
that
it.
That does actually make me wonder when they say years to come. I wonder what that means, because my 2015 iMac runs like it's brand new. I don't need a new one. So like it's 5 years, you know.
Yeah,
like,
but where do you see the
how
new
long
ones?
Will that go?
But wait, I'm saying, yeah, it runs well for an Intel Mac.
But what I mean is for people who
it'll keep running.
You know,
I think they'll keep that going
for more than 5 years.
I'm guessing
from today,
you're stuck
you know?
On Big Sur, would be my guess.
You think so?
Yeah.
I could run something faster than Big Sur on this. This is the Mac that I'm staring at right now.
Well, that's mostly because Intel has made no. This is part of the problem. Intel has made no progress in 5 years. That's part of the problem.
One more major version. You'll get like I don't know Golden Gate or whatever it is next year.
Whatever is
next
year.
And then they'll start to deprecate.
Yeah. Our show today brought to you by Roman Men. Guys, we are terrible about our health, right? The last thing a guy wants to do is go see a doctor. That's because we've been taught since we were in Little League, rub some dirt on it, walk it out. You're going to be fine. Don't cry. But there are times it's really important that you get some help. And there are some issues men can have that really you don't want to suffer. Erectile dysfunction is absolutely one of those. But there's a lot of other things guys go through. Fortunately, there's a solution. Roman was started. I love the Roman origin story. It was started by a young guy whose dad was a doctor, a men's health doctor. And the young guy was in his 20s suffering from ED. And his dad knew that that can be a sign of other issues. They found those issues, thankfully. And I think he had a couple of open heart surgeries because he had heart problems. So it's always an issue. And if you're going to look for a solution to your problem, you do want to go to a doctor. And that's what's great about Roman. None of the embarrassment, but all of the medicine with a digital health clinic for men. They've built this platform to connect you with a doctor licensed in your state without, you know, leaving your armchair. without the embarrassment, and anything that they that anybody can do to make it easier for men to get health care, discreet, professional care, genuine prescription medicine. They have the new generics, which is great. You'll save a lot of money. And they have a lot of over-the-counter treatments for a lot of other issues. In fact, I've been taking their testosterone vitamin supplements, which are great. I feel great. Roman helps you with sexual health, hair and skin like dandruff, eczema, prostate health, bone health. They make it convenient to get the treatment you need right from your home. You grab your phone, you grab your computer. You will get your first online visit absolutely free. You'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. And this is important. They're not just going to write the script. They are going to talk to you. They're going to, if the doctor decides treatment's right for you, medication can be shipped right to your door with free 2-day shipping. But they will do a diagnostic because they understand that often there are underlying conditions. And that's what I really love about this. Free unlimited follow-ups as well, anytime with your doctor. Whether you have questions or you want to adjust your treatment plan, and there's no commitments, you can cancel anytime. I am a huge fan of this because I know guys, we just don't get the help we need, and now it's easy to do. Let Roman be your source of wellness. And if you're struggling with ED and you don't want to talk about it, I know it's an embarrassing conversation. Stay home. Go to GetRoman.com/MacBreak. Suffer no more. You get a free online visit, free 2-day shipping when you go to GetRoman.com/MacBreak. I think this is a really important thing that everybody needs to know about. And you know what? If you have a guy in your life who is not doing it, get it. GetRoman. Just write it on a post-it note. Put it on a screen. GetRoman.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. I have to admit, just like you said, Andy, this was a very exciting time to be an Apple fan. And my biggest concern is Apple is going to really, the ecosystem is going to get stronger than ever. The lock-in is going to be stronger than ever. I'm looking at some of the HomeKit things they're doing, and I'm thinking, we have to get rid of that Google stuff that I've got. I don't need that anymore.
But that's an alliance. That's an alliance because Apple doesn't own the stuff. It's all being bought up by Amazon and Samsung and Google, and so they're making this alliance so we still have access to it.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so, yeah. I don't even know. Bring up anything you want to talk about. There's so many.
Can I ask about widgets? Because you and Andy are Android users. You know, every survey I've seen says that, you know, like, geeks love widgets. They love them, but that's like 10% of users. Most people buy a phone. Whatever widgets are on the screen, they just leave there. They never change them. And I'm wondering if that's going to be true in iOS. We didn't have them, so we wanted them. And now that we have them, nerds like us will play with them for a few weeks and then settle into our patterns.
No, you're going to use them.
The majority of people won't ever turn them on.
You're going to use them. In fact, the main reason I carry an Android phone, it's because of the widgets. But I also noted, and a lot of people are going to say a couple of things, and I've already heard it. Oh, Apple's just copying Android. And actually, I heard some people say, oh, Apple's just copying Windows Phone, which in some respects they are. But I think Apple did widgets. This is what Apple's good at. And I'm not an Apple fanboy, as you all know, but I think they did widgets in a much more thoughtful way. Part of the problem with Android is anything goes. And you can make your screen look like Times Square if you want. Mm-hmm. You tell me, Andy, but the widget stack, that's something that's not on Android. The idea you can have widgets that reflect the time of day and give you the information you would want.
Oh, smart widget stack. Yeah.
Smart widgets. But that's even just a widget stack so I don't have to take up my whole screen. I have on Android, I don't have a lot of room for icons and some
of
my
screens. You know the person who invented Dashboard is going, come on, widgets. I had this a decade ago.
Yeah, but the idea that I could have one widget and scroll through it even is good. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, it's that might be a good point about 10%, only 10% of people using widgets. But how many iPhones did Apple sell last year? And what's 10%
touché,
of
Mr. Notco, touché. Oh,
there you go. There's 2.1 billion iPhones since production began. But it's even in the Android world, I don't always see people who have widgets on their screen. But it's a good thing to have if that works for you. Like I try to ride my bike almost every day, and there are several days when I'm riding my bike in the before times. I have to get into Boston, so I ride my bike to the commuter rail station. It is really important for me to know, like, is it going to rain today? And when is that going to happen? And so that's why I've got like this 1x3 horizontal widget on page one of my launcher that will just always tell me here's what the weather is doing right now. Here's what it's going to do for the rest of the day. And the same thing for my fitness tracker, where this is the first thing when I wake up my phone or when I go to a launcher, this is the first thing I see. And this is a good place for me to remind myself that, yes, you definitely do need to get on your bike today because you have not been making your goals. You have to keep in mind that this is like an app launcher is a multi-page thing. When I'm traveling, when I'm at a conference like in New York or another city, that means that when I flick left from my screen, I'll create an entire like launcher screen that is just a widget with here is my schedule for the rest of the day. Here is like a note that I've pinned to remind myself of who I'm meeting with, and here are like little widget launchers or widget shortcuts to people I might need to text with. It's not the sort of thing that a phone user needs to have. But once you realize that it's there, and if this widget system is done very, very well, it's the sort of customization that stops making this like every other phone and every other Apple ad and makes it personally your phone, the one that responds to your needs.
And I also want to point out,
it becomes a bigger thing too.
Apple people have a bad taste in their mouth from the word widgets. We're not talking dashboard widgets here.
The poor guy from Dashboard Video. He was the godfather of all this.
Did they finally get rid of Dashboard Big Sur?
I think so.
Those widgets, no one used them, but those widgets lived forever. I mean, they were still around in Catalina. I can't remember.
They were hidden. You had to enable them sneakily if you wanted them.
But that's not what we're talking about. These are incredibly useless.
I think the Apple Watch stuff really helped them, right? Like the amount of rich visual, dense information that was still highly glanceable to me is like transformative. I look at these and I look at dashboard widgets, even the old Today View widgets, and it's like those are the stone ages of widgets already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think, Laurie? Have you ever used widgets on a phone?
No, other than the lock screen widgets that are already on the phone
iPad, those Today View widgets. That's not what we're talking about exactly here.
For iOS 13, though, having that side panel with widgets actually was more useful to me than the way iOS 13 currently works, where you have to swipe over to another screen to see your widgets. So even that small jump in iOS 13, where on the iPad you have a side panel of widgets, even that makes a big difference for me. And then now that I'm playing around with widgets on the home screen, it just seeing, for example, the weather right there on a bigger widget, you know, it's just there. I don't have to swipe or anything. It's right there on my home screen. And that does make a big difference.
And also, like Windows Phone, there are live tiles. There are different sizes and shapes.
Mm-hmm.
I predict widgets will be more popular on iOS than they are on Android. I think iOS users, because it's going to be an aesthetic experience,
they're going to mainstream the technology.
Yeah. And I also feel like I personally have suffered. Every time I look at my iPhone, it's like a grid of icons. Really? Really? That's the best you can do with all that real estate? So I'm personally going to dive in.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited, too, by all the people who are intimidated by writing full-featured apps. But if they're learning Swift to say, well, how hard is it to do this little widget that will just tell me the time of my next train?
Oh, yeah.
And that will get this.
Can you write a standalone widget? You don't have to have an app to go with it.
I think they
haven't had that as an option yet.
Yeah, we don't know yet. Yeah.
Like a menu bar app, though. What you're talking about makes sense. One of my favorite things to have on my Mac is things in the menu bar. I've got a dozen of them that just go across my menu bar because that quick access.
There's a good example.
Yeah. And a widget that all it does is like gives you, you know, a tiny bit of information about your battery life or, you know, what's coming up for today on your schedule. But it's not a full-fledged app. It's just maybe a new way to display information on a different app you have. I love this idea.
I'm very curious now. I would write, for instance, I could see for us, it would be great to have a Mac Break Weekly widget that all it did was sit there and tell you there's a new show you want to listen and play it, right? That would be great.
Or what if it gave you the option to open the live stream
There
right
you go.
There on your homepage.
Yeah.
You could have one or the other.
So it's a little bit in between. It's like a shortcut, but it's more than a shortcut because it has informational displays. It's live. I really think this is going to be a big deal. Now, maybe not.
I don't
maybe
think
not.
They allow video in them yet. I think that I think
no,
they're still
but
greatly
you do
limited
have picture
in the
picture
of resources they have
on the iPhone, which cracks me up.
Yeah.
But still, imagine like just to keep selling this point. Imagine a widget that all it does is when you press a button, it will call for a Lyft. And if once you, once you said yes, acknowledge this. Now the widget changes to here is how much time, here is the distance and time that your car is away. That's the sort of thing we'll get onto a lot of home screens.
Also,
is this a?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Also, you know, they have this thing called Clips, which I, you know, Google announced 2 years ago. And I don't think I don't know if it never happened.
App fragments, right?
Or it was never written, but you never saw it happen on Android. Snippets. I think this could be fantastic for exactly that, a Lyft. Where how many times do you get to a town and you don't have the cab application that city uses or the parking meter application?
Yeah.
And just to be able
to rent-a-bike.
Point it out there. Now, I don't know if the NFC or the specially designed Apple QR codes, you never know when Apple announces this stuff if they're going to take off like wildfire or more likely nobody adopts it and it doesn't happen. But I hope more apps use both widgets and Clips. I think they're a really good feature.
Yeah. When people say that, Apple finally has this feature from Android, number one, yay. Just like
nothing
every
wrong with
user
that.
Was celebrating when they got a great feature from Apple. But also, Google, for all of its power, doesn't have that power to really strong arm developers into supporting even the greatest technologies that they've made available for developers. Snippets have been a thing for quite a while. You typically only see it happen when someone messages you like a link to a rideshare, where now it'll just, if you don't have a rideshare app, it'll grab whatever it needs to give you the information you need or to like verify something. Apple, for good and for bad, really has the ability to really lead its developers and say, this is so important that we put together this amazing video, and we promise we're not talking about aluminum or chamfered engines here. We're going to really walk you through why this is an important technology and get its developers motivated to figure out, my God, this is exactly what my app has been needing for years, even though I only found out it existed last week. So it's a much more important thing when Apple announces a new feature for iOS than when Google announces a new feature for Android, because you will get so much faster buy-in from Apple developers than you will from Android developers.
Hey, Lori, what are you most excited about?
Oh, God, there's so much.
I know, it's hard to pick. I know.
You cannot ask what I'm most excited about.
Tell us
about
a couple
of
things.
Much. I definitely loved the widgets and the app clips. I think those were really a really big... my brain right now is processing.
All right.
Okay, like what?
I'll
what
narrow it down.
The millions of things.
There were a number of new things on Apple Watch. Anything you saw there you liked?
Yeah. So with Apple Watch, I think a lot of people are kind of like poo-pooing it, or maybe don't think it's that big of a deal. But I like the screen, face sharing.
Tell me how that's going to work. I didn't really understand that.
Yeah. So, I on my Apple Watch, I have all my cute little custom watch faces. You know, I've got the Pride one that's analog, and I've got the Pride one that's digital. And on the Pride one that's analog, I've got the weather app, but I've also got, the timer, for example. And if one of my friends thought, oh, that's cute. What customizations do you use on that? What complications do you use on that? All I have to do is press and hold and then send it to them, and then they can just get it. I don't have to describe to them what I did. And so if there's Strava or somebody like that, if they want you to use their app, they might on their marketing have an Apple Watch face that includes that. And all you have to do is send this to Apple Watch and it will show up on your Apple Watch. And if you don't have the app, it'll take you to the App Store so that you could just download it directly. I think this is a great little thing.
Does this scratch the itch for third-party faces? Like, this is halfway
It doesn't,
there.
But it to me, it's leading down a path that could be that. Like, it's possible that Apple's testing this out, this sharing thing, and they're seeing how companies would maybe possibly use this for their own marketing purposes. And if they find that to be somewhat successful, they might open this up to allow at least companies to create third-party watch faces.
Tickle to distract you from the itch. They're tickling one side to distract you from the itch on the other.
Well, but yes. Now that they have big complications, you could, I mean, as you mentioned, Strava could have a special complication. You go to their website, mm-hmm. click the link, and now that you have that on your watch, that's close. It's not customizing right. the whole face. But
and they can have multiple complications per app now, too, so you could really take over a watch okay. face,
yes,
like the Nike face.
The other...
It's not just one Nike, yeah.
That's another thing that I'm really interested in is not just the weather complication from Carrot, but maybe the weather complication that either shows me today's weather or it shows me tomorrow's weather. That's something where I could have different customizations for the complication on Apple Watch. I think those are both really cool things.
How about sleep?
You come to the wrong person. I sleep really well.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
That's
oh.
something
I was going to say,
I've
who has time to sleep?
I'm on the other side of the scale where I sleep so badly, I don't want to know how badly I slept. And Lisa's bad because she will every morning say, eh, what'd you get on your sleep score? I got an 86. It's like, oh, shut up. I don't want to know. But
I was at 50 when Georgia made me install the app, and I worked my way up to like 75, 80
oh, nice.
Sometimes.
Yeah, Georgia's a
so
big
So it actually
proponent.
Helped you then yeah. to like come up yeah. with some things that you could try to do, which what, by the way, wind down, I am interested yeah. in. I like this sometimes I do have a bad habit of staring at my phone or my iPad right before going to bed. That just kind of keeps my brain moving too much, and I'll have a little trouble getting to sleep. This is a great idea to prep you for time to go to, because I use the bedtime feature on the clock app that I think is just perfect. But at, you know, 10:30 or 11 or whatever I've got it set for, it just goes, time for bed. That's all I have. So wind down is a way to kind of prep you ahead of time of like, it's, you know, it's 10 o'clock or 10:30. So we're going to dim the screen, or we're going to dim the lights in your house, and we're going to turn on some comfortable music, whatever sort of shortcuts you want to plan for that. And that could help you just prepare for the falling asleep part.
I wonder if Apple has invented some sort of over the air charging, because you're not going to want to ever take your watch off now. Well, I'm just saying, if I wear my watch all day and then I wear it all night, how fast does it charge?
It goes into low power mode. As soon as it goes into sleep mode, it goes into an ultra, ultra low power mode. So an average 8 hours, it's not going to pull too much off. And then immediately when it comes out, it visibly shows you battery level. So the idea is either when you take your shower before going to bed, you'll put it on the charger. When you wake up in the morning and you take your shower, you shave or you brush your teeth or whatever, you'll put it on the charger. And those two small areas will, given how well it charges now, will more than make up for what you're losing overnight.
And then Apple Fitness Tracking will start to give you points for showering, and then people won't be able to take it off in the shower.
The washing your hands is crazy. It listens to the bubbles. Like, it listens to the bubbles down and gives credit for smushing the soap.
It's a limited time offer, but I think it'll be handy because I'm always singing happy birthday twice and stuff. It'll be nice to know.
Bubble science right there.
Yeah. So it knows because of the weird contortions your hands make and the sounds the soap makes. It says, you're washing your hands. Keep going.
I wonder if they modeled that or the dancing workouts first, if it was a good overlap in AI challenges. Like, can we determine hand washing versus salsa?
But more than anything else, I'm glad to see that Apple's continuing to like color in more parts of the fitness map. With every new release, they come up with another area in which they can provide some benefit. And sleep tracking for the past year or so has become a really big issue for me. Not that I don't have sleep apnea, I don't have anything like that. It's just that oftentimes I lose track of how much sleep I got the night before versus how much I'm getting now. And if all it did was tell me that, okay, you were asleep for last night you slept for 4.5 hours, today you slept for 9 hours, and Monday your low score was like 2.5 before you decided that it was time to get out of bed and start working on something. And this is the sort of thing that gets me more and more excited about having an Apple Watch, and damn the torpedoes. I'm hoping that moving Macs to ARM means that we'll get one step closer to Apple removing that limitation of Apple Watches having to be locked into and paired to an iPhone, which I increasingly, but particularly with all the announcements with WatchOS this year, seems like a completely artificial limitation, that Apple should have a way of allowing people to, particularly people who have other Apple devices like an iPad, to have an Apple Watch, to have it paired to that, to use that for App Store installs, and not have to be switch an entire phone platform, just get all of the health benefits, which are getting even more and more piles upon piles, it becomes hard for me to decide not to buy a new Apple Watch Series 5 with each passing month as these new features keep coming in, even if it means that I have to take the latest iPhone that I own is an iPhone 6, and if I have to keep that charged just keep it on a stand, all it does is, turns off the kill switch and saying, okay, we're going to let Andy continue to wear his Apple Watch. He does own an Apple iPhone. Turn off the deactivation sequence. That's what I will do
You got to get the iPhone SE, the iPhone SE 2 to go along with it. Yeah. Then you're in a good place.
That's an iPhone accessory. Watch accessory. Yeah, they should sell bundles. That's brilliant. They should sell bundles that way, where it's like you don't even see the phone in the package. You just, okay, here's the charger and here's the little warranty card. What's this? Oh, it's an iPhone. Okay, I need this to get the watch working.
I suspect there's a certain amount at Apple of. Well, why would you ever not want an iPhone? I don't really understand.
Their other thing is that they have like very specific features that are still dependent on an always-on internet device being ubiquitously available. And the iPad, you can buy a Wi-Fi-only iPad, and there's no Macs with LTE yet. And we just that 5% of non-polish irks us, and it just they get very inflexible sometimes with these things.
Well, I'll just make Apple Watch have LTE. And then you don't have to worry about it.
But it's not
real LTE yet.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I keep saying this, and this becomes less and less of a joke with every new iteration, but Apple keeps saying, look at the lives we're saving and the lives we're improving. Like, okay, but you're apparently saying that that's only the only people worth saving are people who own iPhones.
Yes.
And so get off your 5%. Oh, but there's still raging debates over the inner arc degree angle that we're putting on this. We don't care. We just want an Apple Watch Series 5 that works for everybody who doesn't have an iPhone.
I think the sleep app is also hopefully kind of points down the pathway that Apple might be taking by having the blood oxygen monitor in the next iteration of the Apple Watch. Because if we're already sleeping with our iPhone or with our Apple Watches on, then it can check that blood oxygen level while we're sleeping instead of waiting until we've woken up, which also contributes. This came to my mind because Andy had mentioned something about not having sleep apnea, but there are people who don't know when they have sleep apnea. Yeah. And this could be that could be a feature that comes with the next Apple Watch, is using all of that data that comes with the sleep features right now in WatchOS 7 plus a new Apple Watch with a blood oxygen monitor. We could be looking at help for finding out whether or not you have sleep apnea or some other issues relating to your ability to breathe while you're sleeping.
That's such a great idea, particularly if it can look at both heart rate and O2 level to say, okay, this person might be having an apnea event. Let's wake them up now by buzzing the hell off of his or her wrist. But also, oh, I see that you've got an Apple speaker. I'm also going to put some pleasantly but alarmingly wakingly up music to say, thought you might like to know your heart rate went up to 230 there. And sorry if you didn't want to live, but we thought it would
new,
be perfect.
New feature. But first of all, they're renaming activity to fitness. And my favorite part of the whole keynote was they were showing off the dance workout with, in fact, staying the presenter
alive. Staying alive
dancing, which was great. Although
the Batusi, right?
Kevin Lynch is not a very good dancer, but that was all right.
They have even now teleport this time. We showed off teleportation in 2018. Where is that app?
Where's the roller derby activity? Ren has been working there for so long now. I can't believe
she was busy. Andy, did you see her on YouTube?
She was busy.
What was she doing on YouTube? What was the
feed? She hosted the Dub recap on Apple's YouTube site yesterday. It's amazing.
Nice. Oh, that's great.
It's wonderful.
There's a Serenity Memoji. It's Like, I cannot tell you how much my heart sang when I saw that.
Aww.
Yeah.
She didn't disappear into the firmament. She's actually working.
We didn't even talk about Memoji. Like, I saw Renee, the first I saw of it was Renee instantly updated every single Memoji it posted on Instagram.
Did you, Renee?
Yeah, they have masks now. Well, they have one now that has my COVID hair. So instead of the normal hair, it just grows up. And it had a mask, so I could give a more accurate representation of what I look like outside.
I'm just glad they now have old people. I was tired of looking like a gray-haired hipster. Yeah.
And they have a face mask.
Now you can also say, okay, look, you see this? I still have a little patch of my original sideburn color here. I want my Memoji to reflect that.
Well, let's not go crazy.
The one thing I also liked is that they never forget accessibility features. And some of them were really cool. Like, they're using all of the computer vision technology that they've been building in to stuff like identifying photos and faces, so that if a developer has a bug or is just negligent and doesn't identify a label in an interface, they'll try to guess what it is. Or if photos don't have good descriptions, they'll try to tell you it's two people sitting at a table. Or if it hears something and it's not, it'll try to identify what the sound is for you. And they even made it so that if you have an iPhone with Face ID on it, you can tap the front to wake it like normal. But you can double tap and triple tap the back to launch arbitrary actions, like bring up control center,
I really
the phone,
can't wait
launch
to start using that. There's some really So you tap the back twice or three times. Are both of them programmable or?
Yes.
Oh wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's another example of why not only are accessibility features just generally important for accessibility, but they oftentimes will kind of provide a new means for everyone to share in the joy of using accessibility features. So they're also, Renee, you were talking about, they're making some adjustments to the sound stuff. So when you have headphones, it will let you know how loud of a decibel you're listening to your headphones, so that if it's too loud, you'll get some suggestions to turn it down. And then you can actually access that information in your health app to see, have you been listening to a volume too loud for too long on a regular basis? And maybe it's time to, adjust your volumes settings and things that.
Like, you probably understand that better than me, but you can tune it. If you have different kinds of hearing, you can tune different frequencies.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So with with AirPods and AirPods Pro, you'll be able to like tune to your own particular hearing needs, whether it's that you are having some hearing loss or if you have, tinnitus or something like that. It'll allow you to make those adjustments, and it works with transparency mode as well. So you can actually be, for a person who wants to have the AirPods in their ear when they're walking down the street, they can tune so that they can continue to listen to music and not have to filter out the sounds of things going by that might be dangerous. They could actually increase the sounds of cars driving by in order to make sure that they are staying safe when they have a transparency mode on in their headphones. So some really great stuff.
Yeah. Also, if you have a neural engine in your device, you can do FaceTime group calling, and if it detects you're doing sign language, it'll make you bigger so people can better see your sign language.
It detects that someone is using sign language. How cool is that?
Yes.
It's amazing. That sounds so cool.
Yeah, this is going to be, all I was going to say was that it's going to be super exciting this year and particularly next, because just late last year, the FDA started to move on an old mandate they had to start allowing over-the-counter hearing aids to be not necessarily certified, but sold. Instead of being strictly an audiologist prescribed device for certain types of hearing, you can sell an over-the-counter device that says that if you have problems with this kind of hearing, this might help you. And that's why we've been seeing so many of these wonderful new sort of devices just in the past year or so. And the idea that you could have spent this is exactly the sort of upgrade that I like, where maybe you were just like had a sharp intake of breath when you clicked that buy it now button for your $200 pair of AirPods. But when it keeps getting more and more features and keeps getting better and better, and especially if it can help you realize that, the problem was that wasn't that the volume on this was too low. The problem was that I have a really hard issue getting high frequency, mid to high frequencies in a noisy environment, and now I actually can. So this is, again, part of that holistic approach towards health that I don't think any company is doing like Apple is doing.
So you can get WatchOS 7 on your existing Series 3, 4, or 5, which is very good news. And you'll be able to do the public beta if you dare next month. I might.
What are you, chicken?
There are some differences. Like if you share a watch face from an Apple Watch 5 to an Apple Watch 3, which doesn't have the same faces or complications, it'll have to do some translating. It'll be slightly different. But like, as far as I know, most of the features come through fine.
I don't do group messaging, but Micah Sargent, who does apparently do a lot of group messaging, was very excited about the new messaging features. Mm-hmm. I can't comment on them. I don't have.
You don't have a kids blast. I'm excited group, Leo, about where it. You just yell at all the kids at once.
I should though. That would be good.
I have Leo blast. I have a couple, kids go to bed.
The lawn.
I have a couple group
Leo
messages.
Go ahead, Lori.
Sorry.
I have a couple of group. These people. Quiet, you.
They are not in your group messages. I'm guessing
they are not. Well, Renee's in one of them. So I have a couple group messages going, and this there are so many things about the messaging feature that I identify with so perfectly that I need this. The mentions, for example, and inline responses to things. Somebody will have said something, you know, when you just start moving in your group and you're just doing a lot of talking, somebody said something a minute ago and you're ready to respond, but now five people have already said something else and they've moved on. So when you say something, it doesn't necessarily relate to what everyone else is saying. It doesn't make any sense. And maybe even taken out of context, depending on what you say after what someone else says. So the inline commenting is really, really important. The one problem that I have with this, and I am almost positive this will not be the case, is I don't think that this will work with phones that use Android. So if you're in a group message with even a single person that has an Android device, none of these features will be available. And unfortunately, a couple of my group messages also have Android users in it. And I try to berate them and tell them that they need to get an iPhone or I won't be like their friends anymore, but that doesn't work.
Honestly, this is my problem because I do have the one group message I have is with my family. But my daughter is a devout Android user, and so I feel like I'm not going to get to see the benefit of this. We end up using Hangouts.
Does anybody ever tell you to like put up or shut up saying, well, how much does this annoy you, and how much do you value my friendship? Say, enough to buy me a $399 iPhone SE?
Abby will not.
Don't think I haven't thought about it.
She will not use an iPhone.
By the way, if you take more than 10 seconds to answer, that's an answer.
Yeah, she's not. She is not an iPhone.
Targeting Lori Gill in group messages right now.
Yeah. So they're also you can you'll have the new look for the group messages with you can have an icon for it. I really like this
pop-up. And
those
sync too. Like that you can have up to 9 of those pinned group chats and they'll sync and they'll animate up the numbers and the emoji the tap backs and the talking bubbles. It's really slick.
Makes me want to get some friends.
Talking bubble. So in a group message or even in a single message, there's that little bubble at the top that shows like the avatar of the person you're talking to. And in a group, what does it normally look like? I think you don't even have that in a group message. Checking on a different. No. Oh, they're stacked up in a way this way. So now the most recent person or people to have talked, their bubble gets bigger. So even when you're just not sure what's going on or who's talking, you know who the most recent person was that said something.
And what they
it's
said.
It's pretty great.
Which is
cool. And what
it's like
they
static
said.
Chat heads. Yeah. Is there going to be a battle for bubble supremacy?
Yes. Oh, and pinning conversations.
Lori's going to win.
Oh, pinning conversations. How many times, Renee, have I been looking around in our iMore group chat? I'm looking for it because maybe it's been a few days since we've talked and I need to find something that you said or something like that. I can pin that conversation so that it's always there at the top of the screen.
Otherwise, you have to start typing everyone's name again like an animal.
It's too much.
Translation now. This is just parody with Google and Bing, but still. Nice to have. Safari will also be able to do the translation. The one thing that's really cool about what Apple's doing with translation is it's on device, right? Yeah. So that's, I have to say, Apple was very clear that their one of their main advantages is privacy, and they mentioned it a number of times This is people are more aware of privacy than ever before.
Yeah, I especially like how I really think in the new Safari, the difference between how they prosecute privacy versus how almost every other platform prosecutes privacy. Other browsers, other systems, they use it as though, by the way, here's a dashboard to the side so you can be aware of what's happening. And we're also going to try to block things that might be counter to your interests. The new version of Safari, it's like it's all as a state of DEFCON 2, where its whole attitude and how it communicates to you is that you are constantly under attack by people who are trying to steal your data. Be aware that we've just neutralized this inbound bogey. We have this one that could be a flock of geese. It could be a cookie you actually need to do this transaction. It could be really bad. What do you want us to do with it? I haven't had a chance to install that yet because I don't have it on the desktop. But I love how absolutely proactive it is, and I'm sure that their first big they had three things to say about Safari, and all of them are good. But 50% faster. That's good. One of the most energy efficient browsers you can run, also very, very good. But the aggression with which they are protecting you and protecting your privacy, it just goes to show that I honestly think that health is the thing that they're most proud of across their product line. But privacy and security is number two. Well, okay, maybe accessibility number two, but privacy number three. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys feel like
the only thing that's...
Go ahead, Renee. I'll let you finish.
No, I was going to say like the biggest problem Apple and Firefox have right now is that Google has such a power over the web that people are writing for Chrome the way that they used to write for Internet Explorer. Yeah. And while we like to think that there are web standards, they're more like web suggestions, and everyone kind of implements them a little bit differently and in different timescales. Like if you have to implement 10 things, someone does one of them first and the other one last, and there's different priorities. And so I like that Apple was willing to take plugins that weren't the native Apple plugins anymore, extensions. Sorry, it was like yes, we're capitulating. We realize that we no longer have the ability to dictate extension architectures, but. To Andy's point, we're going to let you choose to run this once, to run this just with this website, right. Or to always run this so that they can't sort of go roughshod through your browser either.
Along with an emoji of your mother saying, "We're not angry with you, son. We're just a little disappointed and surprised. That's all."
I was a little disappointed at the iPad OS. It felt like it kind of all of the new devices got the shortest shrift widgets.
I have this theory that the cursor thing was going to be the big thing, but that was ready early, and so they shipped it with, because that would have blown the door, just that being part of this would have blown the doors off. But the iPad was ready and the keyboard was ready, and they're like, put it into 13.4.
So for instance, widgets on the phone, but no widgets on iOS.
You know, they might change that. You know, this is still like developer beta one. They might just end up allowing you to move widgets off of that little sidebar and into
it's
the
a little weird
the home
that
screen.
They don't. I have a lot of screen.
The discussion
real estate.
Is interesting because their thing is that the screen is so big, we'll just put them in the sidebar. And other people are like, the screen is so big, let's put them
anywhere
everywhere.
We want. Yeah.
Rennie is right as usual. Especially when you look at Dev 1 of the release, there are a lot of things that they could go either way. There are just still debates in-house over which way is the way to go, and it's going to come up. And a lot of it is going to be what feedback do we get from users on which one they like better. So
I suppose it could change, but on the other hand, on the website where they're talking about features in iOS, that's not there. So I don't know.
They got the new style widget, and also I don't think they got the app library either. I haven't double checked.
Yeah,
that, but
they don't have have the app library yet. And,
that's nice.
To me, app library is a really good feature, and there's no reason, real estate be damned, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to have an app library.
It's digital Maria Kondo.
So tell Lori, what does the app library do? This is for iPhone.
It's kind of wonderful. I organize my apps like nobody's business. Anytime I download it, it goes directly into a folder.
Me too.
So my home screen usually only has two, maybe three swipes to it. I'm really good about that kind of thing. But I know a lot of people who just download an app and download an app and download an app, and they have page after page after
Micah
page,
Sargent.
And they're constantly saying,
Micah
right
Sargent.
I don't know
I'm
where
sitting
it's
right
at.
Here.
Micah cracks me up. Micah makes 26 folders, A through Z, but just puts anything randomly in there. They're not alphabetized. He just said, well, I had to name it something. And so it's just like that. He's just jammed. And
I have zero folders. I just have an app graveyard.
You just have 100 pages
downloads
of apps.
Downloads and I leave it. And then I use Spotlight if I have to find something.
Yeah, that's what Michael does.
Yes, so Spotlight is fantastic. That's true. It's absolutely fantastic. But to scratch that organization itch, What the app library does, it's so your first screen, your home screen, it has your app grid with your widgets, and your second screen, same thing. But you swipe one more time, and instead of there being a third screen with a bunch of apps on a grid, you get the app library where all of your apps have been organized. So you've got the recently used, I believe, is the very first one. I'm going to go check it out right now. So your recently used or your suggestions is in the first one. So that means apps that you use regularly. So for me, it would be like Slack or the notes.
It's the same as the Siri suggestions, or is it a little bit different?
It's different. It's very different.
Okay.
Mechanics.
Yeah.
Same
process, but it's going to surface different things.
Okay.
Exactly. And so then it'll have like your suggestions, and then it'll have your recently added, and then it starts organizing them by category, which you cannot change yourself. That does frustrate me. I'd like to be able to rename those. That would make me happy.
Yeah, because Apple often gets those names wrong. I don't like the names it picks when you put two icons together and it goes, oh, we call that Zebra. It's like
they're supposed to learn and adapt, though. So like on how you use the apps, they're supposed to continuously update the order and sequence of them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So it'll be things like utilities and social and productivity. And then one more thing I really like about this is that you can swipe down from the top of the screen and it's app stacks. They're listed. Your apps are listed alphabetically from that point on. So you've got your cute little folders that they're in, if you want to call them folders. And then you pull down from the top of the screen, and now suddenly every single app you have on your phone is listed alphabetically.
Oh, like so, Android.
Are we gonna start that? So if you kind of remember the name of the app, but you can't totally remember it, you can just scroll through it. Or if you just want to see what you've got on your phone without having to do a search, you can just kind of looking for it on the list. So yeah. for me, organizing, it scratches my organizing itch. If you, like Renee was talking about, if you just dump it all on your phone and it doesn't matter because you use Spotlight anyway, that makes a lot of sense. You just use Spotlight anyway. It doesn't matter whether there's a such thing as an app library or not.
Well, this won't stop you from continuing to do that.
My thing, though, because you can hide. So I just have tons of pages. Like I have like 10 app pages because I just keep downloading stuff and it keeps adding pages. But once you have this set up, you can go in and go into jiggle mode and hide all those pages. Like you can put the apps you really want on your first two pages, because that's about the extent of human muscle memory, and then just hide all the other pages and use the app library. And that's what I started doing, and now I don't feel guilty anymore. It's like I only have two pages of apps. What are you talking about?
Did you say jiggle mode?
Yeah,
full access. Thanks, Emily. I just go into jiggle mode. Down deep below the surface. Down deep below the surface. Full access. Thanks, Emily. I just go into jiggle.
Getting jiggle with it.
Down deep below the surface. Down deep below the surface.
All right, you bastards. I knew you were going to create an animated GIF about this somehow, but we beat you to it. You hear me? Everyone step ahead.
OMG Rosetta.
Oh my God. Electric blue.
Why did he run away?
Oh, hey, we made it.
Full access. Thanks, Emily. I just go into jiggle mode. Down deep below the surface. Down deep below the surface. Support for iOS apps. What the f***? Tell me more about that. If you see an original Mac, you know it's about to go down. We fixed Siri this year. That is all I want to hear. Big props to this presenter for also doing the dancing part.
Full access. Thanks, Emily. I just go into jiggle mode. Down deep below the surface. Down deep below the surface. Full access. Thanks, Emily. I just go into jiggle mode.
This is
down
so good.
Deep below the surface. Down deep below the surface.
Kevin Lynch. He's so
is he
cute.
Dancing because Flash is finally gone?
Yes.
Is this just him 10 years
he was the guy who beat up Steve Jobs over that.
Yep.
The next video should be someone superimposing Flash's grave underneath the floor while he's dancing on it.
Credit, of course, to Jonathan Mann, Song A Day, Man, M-A-N-N, on Twitter, for his Just Go Into Jiggle Mode. I was just waiting the whole show. I've been waiting for somebody to say Jiggle Mode so I could play that.
You're welcome, Leo.
Playhouse, that was a secret word.
That was a secret word. You win $100.
That's a lot more important than anybody might be letting on. I really think that one of the security weaknesses of a phone is how little help it gives you for weeding out apps you're just not using anymore. And when you – I mean, there are two –
Apple added offloading of apps that you don't use anymore. So if you haven't opened an app in a month, it removes it from your phone, and then an icon remains there, but it's actually no longer on your phone. You have to actually re-download it from the app store.
You get a shadow icon.
Yeah,
that's exactly from right. Mordor. That's what I was going to say, only less succinctly and with less detail. But yeah, it's not just an inconvenience, because the longer an app sticks around that you're not using, the more opportunities it has to observe connections, observe whatever, drain data, and also just confusion. I'm looking around my office. I'm not speaking about this as a context for my life. the more behind you get and saying that, okay, this icon is something I don't use anymore. I need to get rid of it so it's no longer cluttering up. You see, there's a reason why there's a backdrop here. And
I turn that feature off because I carefully curate every single app on here, and I don't want it removing anything.
It is artisanal homepage.
I don't like the idea that I go to an app and I go, oh, it's no longer there. There's a little down arrow. I got to re-download that. That
But it was Super Monkey Ball 1, Leo. You downloaded it 10 years ago.
No, I delete the old stuff.
You wouldn't have to worry about then. If you delete the old stuff, that won't happen to you.
Yeah.
So it has to be something you haven't opened in a month.
But sometimes
it takes 32 days.
Sometimes there are apps that I haven't used in years, but I want to be there.
App you use once a year, right?
Yeah.
What's going to happen to that?
At least get rid of the ones that don't support cut, copy, and paste. I think that's a good threshold.
It tells you when it's copying now. You notice that when you go to paste something, it says Tweetbot is pasting from the clipboard. So that's part of the
new continuity handoff thing. Is it'll let you know you've got something there. Little drop down. That's nice. I love that. And little things like taking over the whole screen when a call comes in or Siri is on.
Although some people were worried that you wouldn't lose features, but if you just pull down, you get the old screen back. It's like what Andy said. You're gaining things. They're not taking anything away. They're just giving you the option of not having you're about to press something. Suddenly the phone's there and you hang up because that's exactly where the icon you were about to tap when the call came. Now it's just the top of the screen. You can flick it away or you can pull it down and you have the same old experience.
So I do think you might be right about the iPad OS and the cursor, because the other big feature they announced on iPad OS is a return to Newton, Scribble.
It's so good, though.
Is it? No, you've tried it. So, see, this is my question is how good – if it's good, then the idea that I've got the pencil in my hand and I shouldn't have to pick up the keyboard just to type in a search term, that's cool.
Yeah. It's good because unlike the watch version, it's not one letter at a time. Like the watch version is great because it's a watch, but you've got to do one letter at a time. It works well, but like it's a watch. With this, you can just, at least in my experience, you start writing, and I am not a good writer. I can barely fill out a check. I've been typing for so long. But you start in the field. As long as you start in the field, it doesn't matter if you go a little bit out the field, way out the field. And it's, I don't know exactly. I haven't been able to find that exactly how it parses, like whether it's doing it live or it's waiting for word chunk or syllable chunks or line chunks, but it's done a very good job with even terrible handwriting that maybe I could not recognize.
Because I still have PTSD from the Newton, and it felt so much like the Newton to me. But if it can do a good job, you can also, you know, it's got the Newton gestures. You scratch to delete, you circle a word to select it. That's actually a really nice feature. And then also you can be taking notes and then select the notes and copy them and then copy them as text and then paste that in later. I mean, all of that stuff is very interesting.
I really wanted from this. It's like it's making every it's like it's no longer a question of what I'm doing. It just handles it. There's not like a text mode and a note. It's just I am giving you what I want. Please take it and do everything I want with it.
Okay.
Yes.
And I love it that I can draw one of those crappy shorthand stars and it turns into a beautiful. Let me see. I have to scroll back up to get it to do it again. I could draw one of them crappy stars and it turns into a real star. I love that shape recognition. So all of this is funny. All of this really was supposed to be part of Newton. And I'd be very, if I'll be very happy if it works. I think that's
speaking of which, Renee, I haven't installed it on my iPad yet. What happens when you write egg freckles?
I have not tried writing egg freckles, but I will go over after.
This is a classic Newton joke, right?
Yes, when the Newton first came out and the handwriting did not work very well, Doonesbury Strip did a joke about how every time he tries to write something, he gets something else, and one of the things is egg freckles, and they duly chastised by a Pulitzer Prize winning cartoonist. The Newton team put an Easter egg that would cause the panel of that strip to come up.
Oh, that's hysterical. Certain. You're kidding. Yep. I didn't know that.
I've got to try that.
So here's the original joke. I'm writing a test. And this, I lived with the Newton. He says, I'm writing a test sentence. Siam fighting atomic sentry. I am writing a test sentence. Ian is riding a taste sensation. I am writing a test sentence. I am writing a test sentence. Catching on? Egg freckles. I love it.
Can I tell you a story about I just got my new message pad. I was at a like was shortly before Neil Gaiman and David Mack were doing a signing at Comicopia in Kenmore Square, and so I had him like in addition to signing my Sandman, had him like sign like the give me your autograph like on my Newton message pad, but I'd forgotten to like turn the text recognition off, so it kept trying to text recognize what he was saying, his signature, and when he got confused for a second, he said, my God, it's like consulting the Oracle at Delphi, and he kept like writing all over and over again just to see what would happen. And I still have that Newton, and I have the pride of being able to say that I own like an original piece of like Neil Gaiman writing that even he has never read.
Wow,
that's awesome.
That's pretty cool. Yeah,
and that's gonna be my retirement fund, baby.
So, okay, good. So you've used it and you say it's pretty reliable. I'll be interested to see. What it does mean, it's really interesting, is the variety of affordances available on an iPad Pro. You can use the keyboard, the trackpad, your finger, your pen, and they all kind of
work. Scan with the camera.
And I've already noted in my own use, because I love the Magic Keyboard and I've been using it a lot, that it's very natural to go back and forth from touch to keyboard to trackpad. It isn't.
I think part of that is that it projects forward.
There's no,
so like it's not behind the number row and it's not back behind the screen. Like it's a really weird difference, but because it's floating, it's like just that much closer to me.
Yeah, maybe.
It's like immediately right there.
Yeah, there's no cognitive load going from one to the other. It's just very natural. So I actually am very pleased at how that's working out, and I look forward to egg freckles. Yeah. I mean, scribble.
I like the fact that the first most significant step forward for iPadOS in 2020 was making it work a little bit more like a desktop by adding trackpad support. The second most important thing, in my opinion, was the fact that they made it work more like a pen-based computer, which is what it actually is.
Right.
Because that's always it's never really annoyed me that I couldn't do handwriting as easily as that, but it always felt like there is a box in this device that says I owe you one completely intuitive handwriting to text engine. And now finally that block has been shaded in.
There was a real push starting last year or the year before with the accessibility team and then moving beyond them to say that every form of input should be a first-class citizen on every device. And obviously there's like it has to be a trackpad on a Mac for touch, but they really want to make sure that if you're typing, if you're using a pointer, all of those are equally valid ways of interacting with the device.
And you can see
they're sort of fighting their way there.
There's such a huge change from the original days of the Macintosh where there were no keyboard shortcuts at all. If you want to do something, you better damn well pick up that mouse and do it. And it's funny because I feel like Apple's evolved in a lot of ways. For instance, and I wonder, and I mentioned this on iOS Today earlier, if Johnny Ive had actually kind of created some artificial walls about what user interface could and couldn't do that now that he's gone are gone forever. Things like that full screen call coming in thing, we don't really need to take over the screen. I think Johnny loved modality. I think Johnny wanted every app to take up the whole screen, no other things going on, no background stuff. If you're doing Siri, you damn well better be doing Siri and not looking at your calendar. And that was, I feel like that, maybe it wasn't Johnny, maybe it was, who knows who it was.
The team.
But now that Johnny's gone, I notice that they're going back to the original days of Apple, going back to Jeff Raskin, who said you should never have anything be modal. You want to be able to do anything at any time. No dialogue box should take over the screen ever. That was the original Macintosh.
I would love it because they have the new Siri that's has a compact UI as well, and you just say something and it pops up a notification. I would love to be able to grab that notification, pull it into if it's a show me the recipe for pancakes, grab that, slide it right into a widget, and have it persist there until I'm finished making my pancakes. I can't wait for all of those things to meld together until it's what I want when I want it.
Well, and that's why I'm glad that Apple's not being dogmatic. That maybe they're starting to open up a little bit to other ways of doing things.
Yeah, I don't for one second think that Johnny Ive's philosophy did anything but good things for Apple devices. I do think that it is marked by a real dogmatic approach that if you put fewer things on the screen, that's always better than putting more things on the screen. And it always made me think about there were five commandments behind the development of when they developing the Python language. And one of them was that complex is better than complicated. And that's like number four on the list, meaning that we don't want something to be really, really complex, but we would much rather have something that has to be done by a series of steps that are obvious that you can easily work through than something that you are just absolutely sitting there saying, I have no idea how this works. And this is, you illustrated one of the biggest examples for me that I'm doing something, minding my own business on my phone, and then suddenly the screen turns into a call answer thing, and I was right in the middle of something, and my first instinct is, how do I get rid of this screen filling thing, even if it means that, well, here's a button that will dump the call, even though I don't necessarily want to dump the call. I just want to get out of this caveman like genetic fight or flight reflex that this completely modal thing has put me into. So I hope that the new design ethos takes everything that was good about the Johnny Ive era and understands that maybe it's okay for us to put extra things on the screen, and maybe we don't necessarily need there are times when the UI should shout instead of whisper, and maybe have a better piece of balance for that. I'm saying yet again that everything I saw yesterday got me really excited about iOS and iPadOS and macOS and watchOS as well, but I don't have a watchOS because I'm an Android person.
So the way that notifications, or the way that answering a phone or using Siri works in iOS 14 and iPadOS 14 is actually how it works on Mac.
Right.
So
right.
When I saw that, I thought, oh, well, this is just them making
Mac-ifying it.
They're making all of the user interfaces a little bit more in line with each other. Because what are you going to do? Make your entire screen fade out when you're doing when you're using Siri on a Mac. So they needed to figure out ways to combine the design language, and to me that was it. That it wasn't,
maybe it's just that
I don't know that it's like a modal this or that. I think it's just they thought, well, we're trying to make these all look the same, so we can either make a screen have Siri cover the entire thing, or we can bring that notification version of Siri over to the iOS and iPadOS.
There was a joke that because Apple knew that the shutdowns were going to cause significant delays with a lot of the hardware, they're like, what can we do? Let's just find everything that every nerd on Twitter is upset about and give it to them in June. We'll, and that'll distract them long enough that we can ship them.
Pay no attention. Yeah, why do you think no hardware? You think that had to do with supply chain issues, or they really didn't want to distract?
I think it's not just a distraction thing, but if everyone had to be there for WWDC, it would be much easier to show demos for new products, to seed review units, to do all of those things. But with nobody actually having to be there, they could take the time and focus on the software. And we don't know, like, July, the first week of July could be a Mac. The second week of July could be AirPods. The third, like, they could, they've shown the capacity to have sequential concussive product releases just by dropping, you know, pressers and doing virtual conferences. So I think the lack of having everybody there removed the need to do everything all at once.
They did imply AirTags. They talked about finding keys.
And they said it was open to developers
and third parties.
Yeah, they're opening it up to third parties, which I think is honestly is probably part to do with companies that were accusing Apple of
Tile's CEO testified before Congress saying Apple's killing us.
Yeah, so this probably in part was to kind of mitigate that issue, but also setting the stage for the future of their version that will be coming soon. Because if it's already built into the software, they've already got that coming, and then they're faced with, you know, companies that are saying, you're monopolizing the software, then they could go, oh, well, in that case, here, we'll take this box that Spock says you can do it too, and then we're not in trouble when we start selling a product just like it.
Yeah, that's super important.
By the way, we can force you to do it privately.
Let's not forget that all 50 state attorney generals last year announced that they're on a multi-year campaign to put tech companies on notice for anti-competitive practices and for basically to make sure that they can't do exactly what they want to do without making sure that state laws and state citizen interests aren't in line with that. So as obviously Apple seems less vulnerable to a lot of these antitrust things than obviously Google or Facebook or a lot of other companies, but that doesn't mean that they, when they're planning all this, whatever is a gray area that Apple finds, they're going to want to make sure they're on the right side of the line for that.
Let's take a little break. There is a lot of other Apple news, but I think we've done a very good job, and I don't want to, if I've left anything out, if I left, you can scream now, or we'll take a break and go to our picks of the week.
Okay.
I can't even there's think so of it all we'll because there's finish. So much.
So much.
We haven't even talked about the whole home slide presentation they did. I mean, there's just so much.
There's a lot. Well, yep. we'll have stuff to talk about next week, too.
And the TVOS stuff. I mean, there's too much.
Yeah, we can
TVOS was kind of...
There is one interesting question. There's a tiny blob at the bottom of the TVOS page that says 4K YouTube is coming to TVOS, but it doesn't say, oh, we've agreed to support VP9 or, oh, Google's finally doing H.265 or my beautiful dream that everyone's realizing AV1 is the future and it'll just be on everything. But I think that was also a big thing on a lot of nerd checkboxes was their 4K YouTube.
We did think there would be a new Apple TV perhaps, right? But again,
there will be.
There will be someday. Yeah. I'm waiting because mine's fritzing, and I'm
afraid Malibu Stacy is going to get a new hat. Don't worry.
just that Foundation TV series alone requires.
What'd you think of that? They showed a trailer from Apple TV.
I'm nervous that it was so actiony, Foundation isn't very actiony to me. But I'm wondering if that's how they sell it is by
they're
showing all the
action. They're selling it as Star Wars too, is what they're selling it at. They clearly they even mentioned. You know, I mean, it's very Star Wars-y.
Wait, the good Star Wars.
I wouldn't
Wars
blame Apple
Disney
for that,
Star
though.
Wars.
That's, people win awards for the way they edit trailers. So it's not Apple's fault that it had such a action heavy spin on it. So I think that's just the way the person
team.
Who made that.
Right. In a world where the future is known and the Empire strikes back. Wait a minute. No, that's another world.
Between that and Dune, I'm like the little sci-fi child in me is just squeeing back and forth.
You know, I have the exact opposite reaction every single time. And you should, too, if you like Dune. Nothing can live up to your imagination in those books.
No.
And Foundation
I read
is
that book every year.
Perfect. And Dune is perfect. Yeah. And there was no point in trying to bring it to life on the screen because you just can't make it as good as you can imagine it, I think.
And Hamilton's going to be on Apple TV, Leo, so I'll be happy.
That was written for the stage, so it's okay.
That's coming soon, isn't it?
July 3rd,
Apple.
Baby.
July 3rd.
You just reminded me.
So
I've never seen it, so this will be a new experience for me. Brand new.
Now you know,
I don't know
it,
any
right?
Songs
you listen
or
to
anything.
It over
what?
I know. I know this. I know what it is. I know why it's a big deal, but I've never delved into the soundtrack or anything. So this is going to be a brand
debate.
New experience.
Before I saw it, I knew it by heart. And in fact, a lot of the people in the theater with me knew it by heart. You could just watch. Everybody's going, But what do you think, Renee? Should she get the soundtrack now and get to know it better? I would.
I don't know. I've never seen it, but I've listened to the soundtrack repeatedly. Yeah. Okay. So I think you'll enjoy it. It's just so good. I think it doesn't matter. Like, it is transcendently good.
Yeah.
And you'll enjoy it regardless.
I liked it that I knew the soundtrack before I saw it, but that's how I did it. So
I think it could go either way, because I think part of the reason that I haven't listened to the soundtrack is that I kind of want to go into it with a pure mind.
That's probably
and
true.
Not just have the music memorized, but actually watch this play.
But knowing the soundtrack, and I'm sitting in the theater and you hear dum da 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 dum 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 dum,
it's like
my head exploded.
But you can presumably watch this over and over again. So, like, the first viewing is fresh, and then the 20th viewing, you're like,
good point. I only had one shot to see it on Broadway.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
That's a good
point. I'm with you, Lori. Though I got when somebody passed me a link to a bootleg video of the original cast, like shot from a balcony, I kind of had to download it while the link was still good, but I have not seen it because I knew that I had heard early on that they were planning on. That they're planning on recording like the actual stage production for a future release, and that's always been my. Do I spend when someone offered me a chance to like buy one of their extra tickets, and I'm like, it wasn't so much the $350, it was the, but I know that at some point I will be able to like watch the. I kind of wanted my first viewing to be the original stage performance for even though the people on the tour are great, they are Broadway caliber, they are Broadway performers. It was like,
I'm not gonna say anything because I don't want to.
Don't
spoil it. I understand there are things about the staging that are they're a wonderful surprise even for people who have like know the soundtrack.
The funny thing is there's no spoken word, so if you know the soundtrack you know the whole show.
Then I definitely don't want to be spoiled.
But there are definitely I didn't see it, and once I saw it, now when I hear the soundtrack I see it. I don't know.
But also, if you've never studied, like, I didn't take American history in school, obviously. So, like, a lot of the characters and stuff are new to me anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Who's this guy?
You never heard of Hercules Mulligan. What the hell?
Okay. I barely heard of Alexander Hamilton.
I think you were not alone. A lot of Americans thought, well, he's the guy in the $5 bill. I don't know. What did he do? He was a treasurer,
right? He's one of our
best
presidents ever.
Right. All right, let's take a break. We're going to get your picks of the week in just a little bit as we wrap things up on the most exciting week for Apple in years. I mean, seriously. Now, in here, we have excellent air. And it's very important to me that we have excellent air. At home, too, a molecule is a unique air purifier, especially for people who are living or working in offices that are sealed. Indoor air can be 5 times worse than outdoor air, according to the EPA. A molecule is the solution. It's not just an innovation on existing technology, but it's literally a different way of purifying air. Its core technology is called PECO. That's photoelectrochemical oxidation. And what it does, it actually destroys pollutants in the air, like viruses, like bacteria, like mold, like chemicals, tiny little particles. It doesn't just collect them on filters. It destroys them, protecting homes, businesses, medical spaces. So you know they're destroying the pollutants and providing clean air. And by the way, there is a new molecule I want to tell you about. Molecular air purifiers are designed for big rooms. This is a giant room. I don't know how many square feet, John, you think? This is, you can go up to 600 square feet with a molecule. The Air Mini is for the little one. 250 square feet. There's a new Air Mini Plus that helps protect small rooms with a particle sensor and auto protect mode, which adjusts the fan speed based on the amount of particulates. And the new Molecule Air Pro RX, this is FDA approved as a 501K Class 2 medical device. It's intended for medical purposes to destroy bacteria and viruses in the air. We're spending a lot more time at home these days, and we're probably a little bit more aware of how important it is to keep the air clean. Molecule's PECO technology meets the performance requirements in the FDA guidance for use in helping reduce the risk of exposure, believe it or not, to SARS-CoV-2, the COVID-19 virus, in healthcare settings. There's independent testing. You can see it on the Molecule site, shown to reduce concentrations of MS2, which is something they use for testing. It's a proxy virus for SARS-CoV-2. by over 99.9% in 1 hour. Now, this doesn't mean you can, you know, you don't have to stop washing your hands or anything else or social distancing, but it is an extra layer of virus protection in your spaces, and now you can have it in your home. Molecules, technology, and filtration systems have been tested and verified by independent third-party labs. For the whole home and beyond, Pico technology is a miracle, and it has really saved us. Read the white papers available on the site, and I think you'll get some sense of what kind of a wonderful device this is. You get 10% off your first molecule right now at molecule.com. We have three of them, and I'm thinking I should really get this new AirPro RX. That looks really good. Maybe for the studio, John, because you know we share this air. Enter the code MacBreak10 at checkout. MOLEKULE, molecule.com. Enter the code MacBreak10. Now more than ever, you need Molecule. Thank you, Molecule. Now let's get our picks of the week. We'll start with you, Renee Ritchie.
So mine, you know, aside from everything that we were just, I don't know, tsunamied with yesterday, a little earlier, well, actually last week, the latest Fantastical update came out. Oh. Now, some of the news from WWC is that you'll be able to choose your own mail and browser app in iOS and iPadOS. You won't be able to choose your own calendar app, at least not yet. They said that the browser and mail were the most popular requests they'd gotten. But I hold out hope. And either way, Fantastical, just in general, is still the fastest way I've ever found to get stuff into and out of a calendar. So much so that I've told the one of the developers, Michael Simmons, that I hate him because he makes me use calendars, which I really don't want to use, but they're just so easy. The update that they just put out, I think it's 3.1, is all work from home sort of stuff. And the cool thing about it is, like, yeah, it'll handle Zoom links. It'll handle all these different conference call links that we're frankly befuddling a lot of, like, I would just get these invitations from people and I'd have to mentally parse, oh, it's a Zoom link, let me cut and paste that in. Oh, this is a Google, what is it, Hangouts or Meet or Hangouts Meet or Meeting Hangouts. Or it was a lot to deal with. And in typical Fantastical fashion, this just parses all of that. And I don't really have that much to think about anymore. And they've done some other nice stuff, like they've revved the proposed email system where you can sort of go back and forth to find a time that works with all of you, and they have timed calendar sets. But in general, I think it's super cool that companies are thinking about the ways in which their products are being used differently when you're not at home and you're not at work, but you're working from home, and sort of architecting to fill in those design spaces. And this is a really nice example of that.
Good. I'm a subscriber, so I presume I get it automatically, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, it works so well.
No, love my Fantastical. Andy Anako, pick of the week.
Well, of course, now that we're starting the transition from Intel to ARM, I thought it was finally about time to buy myself a PowerPC Mac, and I went on eBay and I got this iMac G4.
Oh my God.
That's been on my wish list for a very long time because I think it's one of the most beautiful computers ever made.
I agree.
Probably also one of the, I'm definitely up with the G4 Cube as one of the prettiest Macs ever made. Because one of the things that was so great about it was that it had this articulating arm that was not just, hey, look, you can adjust it a little bit and it makes it look like a Pixar lamp, but the idea that you can have this on your desktop and then, like, if you're standing up because you need to check something, it will work in a standing up mode. If your kids are using the computer, they can pull it down and use it in a pulling down mode. It's really, really stable. I say that because I've been trying to hold this with one hand and that base is like 80 pounds, so I'm going to put it down now. But
what are you going to do with it? Is it going to be a fish tank? You're not going to use it, are you?
I am going to get it back up to speed. It has we are talking about 700 megahertz G4 processor here with 128 megabytes of RAM. It'll run Tiger.
Megabytes, kids. That's 1/8 of a gigabyte.
I'll admit that I bought it for its decorative functions. Beautiful. However, I am going to get it running on Tiger just to see how far I can go with it. If not, I can probably put Linux on it, but that seems like a sacrilege. I'll probably just keep it as it is going to be like a permanent. There's like a second desk I have in the living room, and there's probably going to be point of pride placement on that desk. And I can use it to play music. I could use it to, you know, noodle around places. It's just such a pretty thing. And because it's not like the 20th anniversary Mac, I bought it for about, I think it was like $75, $80 plus $50 shipping for that. For that amount of money, it was like, I'm not going to do this kind of crap every single month, but I'm definitely going to do that today. Cause I've always wanted one. It was one of those things where I got when it came out in like 96, 97, the first one. This one is a 2002 model, by the way. But I had it for a couple of months on loan, and I just hated to pack it up and send it back because I was just enjoying it so much. Also the repacking was a very, very complicated affair, as I recall. But yeah, there are just some Macs that are so beautiful that even as a static object, I feel as though they more than make up for the amount of oxygen that they displace in the room that you set them up in.
Tom Nardi on Hackaday does show you how you could put an Intel NUC in there, but then you'd have to run Windows.
I mean,
Raspberry Pi project you can use for it.
But you want to run Mac on it. You can get chat room says you can get up to 10.5.5. That might be worth it.
That's without. I think there are tweaks you can do in order to get to run all kinds of cool stuff. I feel as though my radar is still open for like if the MIT flea market ever reopens again. It's canceled through July. They might have one in August. But if I do have the ability to buy another one super super cheap, I think that's the one that I'll play with getting it running something else or gutting it out, just using it as an enclosure for something else. Because there's just I feel as though the Mac interface, especially the Tiger interface running on this, is kind of like two parts of the same expression. And it just makes me happy to have this thing on my desk.
It's pretty cool.
It is pretty.
Pretty cool. Yeah. It's such a beautiful. Remember Steve Jobs, and in the biography they talk about it, I spent a lot of effort on that arm. He really, he was so proud of that. It's never going to, is it still worked? Does it still hold the screen up?
It's still perfect.
That's what he said.
It's so perfectly balanced. And this is the place where if you were to buy like a Windows machine that had that kind of idea, it would probably work fine for the first 3 or 4 months. But then it would, as some engineer at some point would say, well, when I put it into this particular position, it lowers itself by about a half an inch or an inch after I let go of it. Okay, that's close enough. This one, though, you put it in whatever angle you want to put it in, it stays exactly in that angle.
That's
and
pretty
moving
cool.
It is absolutely effortless. Yeah. It's not like you have to unscrew something and go. It's just such a I think this is almost at the perfect intersection for Apple of form and function. You rarely see that kind of perfection in any kind of manufacturing. And I think I'll be damned. You definitely see it here.
So how old is that? That came out in 2002. So now we know 18 years later. That arm still holds.
My said cartoon it would. Brain says you should be able to throw a Mac Mini right in the bottom. Like you should be able to hold it and throw the Mac Mini hard that it goes right into the bottom. And
actually, you're right. Boom.
I bet if you took a Mac Mini apart, because this does have like a sliding out DVD tray, you can have the tray slide out, put the Mac Mini motherboard in there, close the tray, and then have a fully like at least an Intel based machine.
Well, like a sonic screwdriver makes it just work, like something like that.
The other thing I'm impressed. I could never afford the 20-inch. It looks like you got the big one.
Mm. No. This is like the original. I think it's the 15-inch screen.
Okay.
I plugged
it. It looks so
to
big when you held it up.
Oh, because
it's so beautiful.
And so I'm sorry that I didn't. Let me see if I can very very quickly. Oh no, I can't.
Okay.
I wish that I'd remember to like zoom out on this thing. But
it's beautiful.
Like I said, it's just a beautiful object.
Yeah.
You could get a Mac Mini and put a Pro Display XDR right on top of it, and it'll be a similar aesthetic. Not as cheap.
The arm is more expensive than the whole thing. Lori Gill, what should I buy this week?
Well, get out your wallet, because I think you might actually want this one. Though you do already have a really nice iPad Pro case, because you have
the Magic Keyboard.
But Nomad who makes wonderful, beautiful leather goods. They're making iPad Pro cases now. And they made a rugged folio that is absolutely gorgeous.
It's pretty.
Yeah. It's pretty. It's real pretty.
Yeah. Not with a keyboard, just a case.
Nope, it's just a folio. Front and back, though, which is really nice to have that case again that covers the front and the back. It has very, very similar design aesthetic as Apple's folio. So it, you know, folds into a triangle so that you have kind of the angled pad. And it has the back casing to cover and protect the back side of it. And it's made with that gorgeous, gorgeous leather that patinas over time. And yeah, this is their first iPad case. So this is pretty exciting. You can get one to match your iPhone.
Well, you know what? Actually, I'd like to get a case. I was thinking, I miss my wallet cases. I bet they make a nice... I wonder, I should look for the 11.
I think they have the, not a folio, but a backside case, I think. Yeah. You know, a sleeve on the back.
Sleeve on the back, yeah.
I think so.
Really love their stuff. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I looked at their website and they said they're selling medical supplies. What? And it turns out they've branched out to masks and hand sanitizers and cleaners, all the stuff you can't get anywhere, even gloves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff that they do, when you buy it, a portion of it goes to help support them making them for the medical industry.
Nice.
So they pivoted to specifically make things for the medical industry. And because they were making things for the medical industry, they decided to open it up to us to buy. And then a portion of that would be going to support their cause to make medical supplies for the medical industry.
Well, good for
them. It's a neat little thing they started doing.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Very nice. Thank you, Lori Gill. I think I can resist because I love my Magic Keyboard so much.
I know that it's hard to think of ever doing anything but using the Magic Keyboard now that it exists.
My iPad is like 100 times more useful now, and as soon as I get iPad OS 14, I'm going to be really ready to go. Ready to rock. Lori Gill, you'll find her at imore.com. She's managing editor there. She's at Appaholic on the Twitter. She won't find her band Sick Burn performing anywhere soon, but...
Nope.
You could do a living room show, maybe.
Yeah. This is your opportunity to do your Sergeant Pepper Abbey Road phase. You've given up touring because there's so many people, you can't even hear yourself, so that you create your own studio sound.
So my significant other and my next door neighbor started, I might have already mentioned this, but we started a quarantine band. We wrote 9 songs and recorded an album.
Oh, so, nice. Yeah.
We've already got that going.
We got the quarantine band. We're getting the quarantine band back together.
Yeah.
Thank you so
We're already
much.
Talking about our second album that we're going to record. We haven't even finished mixing down the first one.
Quarantine's good. It makes you productive. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Mr. Andy Yannacco, WGBH coming up.
Thursday at 1:20 p.m. Obviously, I'll be a day and a half smarter about what happened at WWDC. So look forward to that. As usual, tune in to WGBHnews.org to stream it either live or later on in the day. And here's the white shot.
Oh, isn't that
there
beautiful?
You go. That's just
so jealous.
So cute.
Yeah.
Yes. It looks like it could come alive and give you a hug.
Yeah. Well,
it's so cute.
Came first, the Luxo lamp in the Pixar opening or that?
Because Luxo by a long shot.
So it's kind of modeled after Luxo, I guess. Yes.
I must have been inspired a little bit by that. But also, there have been people who have, like, at least in the day, they've actually created like a motorized version of this so it can actually like articulate itself. But yeah, this should you could spray paint this gold, and this would be a really good industry award for somebody.
Wouldn't it?
Guys, I can't believe this.
I won a Mackie.
I want to thank God.
Renee Ritchie at the eponymous YouTube site, youtube.com/Renee Ritchie. It's going well.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, it's the whole shelter in place thing has been everybody watching, but not everyone able to support in the ways they traditionally have. But it feels like we're slowly working our way out of the darkness and into and into the light. So, and it's a lot of fun. Right now, I just did a huge deep dive on iOS 14. And as soon as I finish this, I'm going to edit my even huger deep dive into Apple Silicon on the Mac. So I'm having a blast.
Oh, I can't wait. I've been waiting for that one. That's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. Renee, can you make sure you have that published at least an hour before Thursday the next at 1:20 p.m. Eastern time? I might need to take a look
at that. Save me some time. I miss the John Syracuse days, the 100,000 word articles, but
he had such a great tweet. He said, like, as soon as you see Tim Cook with a vintage Mac on stage, you know that some stuff's about to come down.
Yep. He was right. And what was I going to ask you, Renee? I don't
remember. Pick of the week?
Did you get a pick yet?
Oh, you already did that.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, you already Fantastic. Did that. Cal, sorry.
Oh, he started way back. Years ago. So did this show years ago. Thank you, everybody, for being here. I hope you've enjoyed it. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, around about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That would be about 1700 UTC, something like that. You can watch live or listen live at twit.tv/live. You can also get on-demand versions from the website, twit.tv/MBW. There's a YouTube version as well, but I think the best thing to do would be subscribe in your favorite podcast application. And that way, you'd get it. It'd be automatically provided to you the minute it's available. All right, now, everybody get back to jiggle mode because break time is over.
Hey, folks, I am Micah Sargent, co-host of Tech News Weekly right here on the Twit Network. Yes, Tech News Weekly is a show we do every week, Jason Howell and myself, where we talk to people who are making and a break in the tech news. That's right. It's journalists, it's inventors, it's app makers, it's everybody who's bringing the tech news in a given week. It's all the stuff you want to know about in bite-sized chunks in a fantastic package. So be sure to subscribe. It's twit.tv/TNW.